The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Experience the unconventional.
Evening, boss.
The unpredictable.
What's happening?
And the completely unorthodox.
Exactly.
With rule-free Ian Lee. The late-night alternative with Ian Lee.
I've got no internet for the last 4 days.
On Talk Radio.
Here we go. Yes. Start as you mean to. What's the phrase? Start. Here we hang on a minute. It's gonna. Hang on a minute. Let's. Can't remember. Let's forget that. Okay. Right. Good evening, dear listener. Late night alternative. Ian Lee is back. Catherine Boyle is there.
Whoops.
Well done. We've got Amy on the phones. 03 44 499 1000 is the telephone number. Here's the thing, right? New listeners, every single day, once they realise what a car crash LBC has become. Is it too shouty for you? Tough! Once they realise what a car crash LBC has become, we're just getting more and more listeners all the time. In fact, we're getting too many listeners, and we may have to stop that at some point. But if you're waiting for a question, if you're waiting for the topic, if you're waiting for the things to go, what's it about tonight so I can pick up the telephone and call in? There is no thing. There's no thing. And if you put those two together, you get the word nothing. So there is nothing. At the moment, after 11, there will be. We're going to talk about sexual predators in art. But before that, there's no thing. There's nothing. So you are welcome to call in about absolutely anything you want. And the phone number is very, very simple. It's free for the majority of you. It may cost you pennies if you've got a lousy package. But don't worry, because you'll speak to Amy. She takes your name and number. Doesn't ask what you're calling in about. Takes your name and number and calls you straight back and puts you on the radio. This call is on us, dear listener. 03 44 499 1000. 03 44 499 1000. That's the phone number. Why don't you try it and see if it works, you slackers? Thank you to almost everybody who came to see Catherine and myself in Brighton at the weekend. Great show. Filthy show. Very, very blue. Lot of adult material. A lot of jokes for the dads. And thank you to almost everybody that came. I say almost everybody. There were quite a few people who came late because there was a football match on. Some of them came late because of a football match. Some came late because they'd just been drinking in another bar.
But fortunately, they came in quietly and they didn't make a big show of themselves all the way through.
Here's the thing. If you come into a show late, right, first of all, don't just sit there giving me skunk eye all night, as one young lady did. And then secondly, don't sit in the front row, not laughing, talking to the person you've come in late with. And at the end, then during the interval, dump your bags in the corner on what we laughingly called the stage, but it was the performance area. So then at the end of the show, when we've said to people, hey, if you want to come and get a photograph, you can, before we pack everything up. So you then wander onto the stage and I say, oh, do you want a photo? No, I'm not that desperate. That's rude. That's ill-mannered. And we've got your 14 quid and I'm tempted to give it back. I don't want that 14 quid. I've spent it actually, so you can't have it back. But that was rude. That was ill-mannered of her, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right. We can, if you, some of you like to have your hands held as we do these radio shows and like to be suggested topics. Although when I listened to Catherine last week throwing out gold topics, Catherine,
gold after gold.
None of these screwballs went for them, and that's fine. That's fine. That's 3 years of education. And by the way, welcome to season 4 of the Late Night Alternative. That's right, guys. I just got another 12-month contract. So everybody who said I wasn't going to last 20 minutes, in your face. Catherine's contract is only 2 months long. That's for her to deal with. That's absolutely nish, nada, nero to do with me. Nothing to do with me whatsoever. 03444991000 is the telephone number. So you can talk about rudeness in theatres, rudeness at live events, a-holes, and being late for events. There you go. There are four topics we've just thrown out just like that. And do you know what? None of you will pick them up and none of you will run with them. Ah, rude guests. Did you hear Bob Mills last night?
No.
It was good. It was a weird show. Right. His first guest didn't turn up. So the first hour was just Bob Mills talking, which I could listen to because I love it. Sometimes I kind of prefer it. So the first guest on Bob Mills, Sunday night, 7 to 10, it's a great listen, didn't turn up. So he had nothing for the first... They phoned him up, apparently, and said, oh, I've just missed my train, can I come in next week? And Bob, or the producer, went, it don't really work like that. we're kind of full next week, and we were kind of banking on you not missing your train and coming in for the first hour so you could promote your book. So that was weird. And then in the last 45 minutes, did anyone else hear this? In the last 45 minutes, he had Angus Deighton on.
Okay.
My God, what a miserable man.
Oh, really?
What a really grumpy, I'm going to say it, slightly rude interview.
You'd think after what he's been through, he'd be grateful for a bit of positivity.
Yeah. And what was interesting was Bob was obviously kept hinting at that. You know, the coconut hookers. Kept hinting at that's kind of sort of where he wanted to go. And Angus was having none of it. Fair play. And that's fair enough. It's fair enough. But if I'd have had the 35 minutes of being shut down... And by the way, if you heard it, dear listener, have I got this wrong? Because I fell asleep, then I woke up and heard it. So maybe I got it wrong. But I heard Angus Deighton being rude, right? And if after 35 minutes of being shut down, being, you know, given the kind of squirm, I'd have gone, all right, Angus, OK. So this cocaine and hookers thing, let's talk about that.
Yeah, Angus, what's to lose?
What's to lose? I mean, he walks out, you got a better interview than the first 35 minutes. I thought he was rude. I thought he was really rude. It was a really... I could hear Bob. I think they know each other a little bit.
Right.
I don't know if he was doing a thing, but I could really hear Bob scrabbling for material. That's not like Bob Mills at all.
The deal is this: do the interview, don't do the interview, but don't come in and do it begrudgingly.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. I don't know if you heard it, dear listener. Maybe have a listen tomorrow if you get the chance. I think you've got more important things to do. It's Easter holiday for crying out loud. But if you heard it, dear listener, am I right? 03444991000. And then I fell asleep again, and then I woke up during Howard Hughes' show, 10 till 1, Sunday night, The Unexplained. And he had, I'm not swearing anymore on air, I'm trying not to swear anymore on air. So he had a ball shiner on. He had a guy, an American guy, talking about remote viewing, where you lie in a bed, stay there, and you're going to be the first cab off the rank in a minute. You have you lie on your bed, and you can see stuff around the world, right? And this guy would explain it. And Howard has this strange thing he does. Well, when someone's explained something, he goes, "Oh, I get it. You mean like..." And then he kind of does a different explanation, right? And every time he did it, the guy would go, No, Howard, I think you've misunderstood. Let me try and simplify it for you. Okay, have you seen the movie The Matrix? Right. This is his simplification.
That's simplifying
of...
simplifying it.
This is his simplification of remote viewing.
Wow.
Have you seen the movie The Matrix? Well, you know when all the information gets downloaded on the screen and it goes very, very quickly? Well, it's like that. Ah, I get it. So it's what... No, Howard, you're not quite getting it. And bear it in mind, this guy was talking out of his butt, just making stuff up. Because here's the thing, dear listener, remote viewing isn't real. It's not real. And then he's going... So Howard's going, have you got any evidence that this worked? Well, yes, I do. You remember Gulf War II, when Saddam Hussein was in hiding? Well, I was teaching a remote viewing class, and some members of the CIA came up to me during the break and said, can you help us find Saddam Hussein? And I said, sure. And I could see, I saw Saddam Hussein hiding in a dark place with another guy. And a few days later, he was found hiding in a dark place with another guy.
That's a fairly safe guess, though, isn't it?
It was outrageous.
Wow.
And this guy got an hour of radio. Hear those radios switching off because it's gone all shouty again. Tough, that's the act. He'll go quiet in a bit. Deal with it. I haven't been on air for a week. I'm excited. Oh, Kath. Yeah, I heard. Oh, Kath, I like talking to you because at least we can get a word in edgeways. You suckers. I like listening to you, Kath, because it's not so shouty. I guess stuff, you screwbags. 03444991000 is the telephone number. This is the Late Night Alternative. I am Ian Lee. Catherine Boyle is here. You can phone up about absolutely anything you want. But so far we've got rudeness at shows, rocking up late, rude guests, there's a rude vibe going on, and remote viewing. There are four perfectly good topics for you. 03444991000. This is Talk Radio.
The wild man of late night radio.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
You can give us a call about anything. After 11, we're going to do something a little bit different. I have had the contract renewed for... Well, I had a weird contract, right? The contract was renewed when I was in the jungle. So December 2017, one of the first phone calls I got. Well, the first phone call was to kids. Second phone call was to you, Boyley. Third phone call was to my agent. Something like that. It was some order like that. And he said, we've got a two-year contract at Talk Radio because I'd done the jungle. He said, but there is a week, the last week of March, where they can terminate the contract without any penalty. Right, so that was the last week of March. I didn't terminate the contract. So I got another year. So the late night alternative is here for another year. And me and Catherine, when we were driving to and from Brighton, the show in Brighton on Saturday, thank you to everyone who came. We got the shows are selling out. Something's happened. Glasgow sold out. The first Manchester show has sold out. London in June has almost sold out. Belfast is doing very well. IanLee.com/event. IanLee.com/event. But so me and Catherine had a chat, right, about the show. And the show, I'm so proud of the show. And listening to the show last week, it's the first time I've listened as a listener as it's gone out live. There's a big difference from listening to the podcast or listening to the best of.
But even the sound quality is different. Because
it sounds like a proper radio
show.
Yeah,
you use these microphones and sometimes you're talking to the listener or talking to a caller.
Yeah.
And everyone's talking at the same time and you think, can they actually hear what I just said? Yes.
These headphones make it sound crap. I was listening on my phone. It sounded like a proper radio show.
Crazy.
But I listened and there were a few things I thought, not in anything to do with Catherine's performance, au contraire. But there were a few things I thought, okay, well, we've been doing that for a while and I think I'd like to maybe just change that and shift that around there and do that. So me and Kath have had the... I'm here for another year. Hopefully I'm here for another 20 years. Hopefully we're both here for another 20 years. I would happily, this is my favourite job I've ever had. I would happily, you know, grow old and die here. This is a bit... But, you know, we have decided to treat the next 12 months as though it were the last 12 months of the gig, as though we knew we had 12 months left here. And so we're going to go... We are going to pull out every single flipping stop that we can. We're going to raise our game. The last 3 months have been weird with me talking about sex stuff and the car crash and the divorce. I would say since the end of December up until last week, it's been weird and it's been dark for me on a personal level. And I think that can't help but come across in the show. And also when you've been doing a gig for 3 years, you kind of get a little bit comfortable. You know, you get a little bit, you stop, you know, putting on your fancy clothes and your fancy makeup and stop brushing your hair and you get a little bit comfortable with it. And maybe I have not been doing my best. So, we are going to, we have decided we're going to treat the next 12 months as though they are the last of the late night alternative. Fingers crossed they won't be. We are going to pull out all of the stops. We're going to shake a few things around. We're going to do a few new things. We're going to get some bits of it going to be experimental. There's going to be bits of it, guys. I hate to tell you this. There's going to be bits of it that you won't actually like. Because you'll go, well, that didn't work. I'm prepared to fail in a hugely public spectacular way. We haven't failed enough recently, Catherine. We've had a few failures. We haven't failed enough. So I really want to, I want to try stuff. I want to do stuff. I want to try some new things. And if they fail, brilliant. I don't want them to fail, but if they fail, brilliant. We embrace that and we learn. And one of the things that we're going to do is after 11, we're going to play a thing that me and Catherine recorded a couple of years ago, and we tried to sell it to Radio 4 and to Audible, and Audible were really interested for a year, and then they went, actually, we don't think we want it, and it was going to be the first of a series, and we never made the series because we were having our chains jerked for so long. And some of you will have heard it before, because we put it out as a rabbit hole podcast, but a lot of you won't. So after 11, we're going to play a documentary, it's only about half an hour long, I think, that me and Catherine made, where I go and hang out with Gary Glitter fans. Okay, I go and hang out with Gary Glitter fans who are still really, really into Gary Glitter, despite the fact that Gary Glitter, Paul Gadd, is a child rapist and is still in prison right now for raping children. And I think it's really timely with the whole R. Kelly thing that we've been talking about, with the Michael Jackson thing that we've been talking about. And we'll have, if you want to join in, you'd be welcome to have a little conversation about, can you separate art from the artist? Should we, you know, completely scrub these musicians out of musical history? These artists, it's not just music, should we forget? Anyway, so we're going to do that. But then I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be nice if we went and did a few more things. And I've got a couple of ideas of you know, things where I'd like to go and spend a day or a night or a weekend, you know, with groups of people and record it and then bring it back. And I don't have the technical skills. So, Catherine, I would love it if you'd edit it for me into a nice little 30-minute, 40-minute, hour-long, whatever it warrants, little package, you know, a little documentary. And then I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be great if me and Kath did some together? If I did some on my own, and I enjoyed listening to you so much last week, so much, it was a thrill. It really was. It was funny, and it was great. So I said, "Well, Kath, it'd be great if you went out and did some on your own." And then we came up with a kind of couple of ideas in the car down to Brighton, and one of them is, and you can tell me if you've made any progress on this, is I want to hear you on a porno set.
Yeah.
While they're making a porno.
It's going to happen.
Is it happening? Mm-hmm. Oh, yes! I didn't know that! Oh, that is brilliant, is it?
Yeah, we're talking about schedules.
Yes!
So,
or schedules?
No, schedules.
Okay.
In this country.
Okay. Well, I embrace America.
Okay.
Because I've heard I've not been to a porno site, and as a sex addict, I think it would probably be slightly triggering, but I've heard a version of me doing those things, and I've heard John Ronson on a porn shoot, I've heard Louis Theroux, I haven't heard a woman on a porn shoot. Someone pointed out on Twitch that apparently Ruby Wax has done one.
Yeah, but we're quite different characters.
Very different, and you know, I think Theroux and Ronson, I think I share similarities. So it's happening, is it? Yeah. Oh, mate!
Once the kids go back to school, obvs.
Oh, yeah,
I can't really take them.
bring a child to work day. Oh, that's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be brilliant.
So we're going to do things like that. So if you have any ideas of... Don't tweet and at. Phone in. Let's make this a phone-in show, please,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, what we don't want is for you to at people who you're suggesting, because then it gets a bit awkward if we don't take you
And also,
it.
Don't even tweet. Don't even tweet it. We're trying to knock Twitter on the head. It's a phoning show. I don't want to go all... Who's that old racist on BBC Local Radio?
Oh, what's his name? He's not on there anymore, is he?
No, he got the boot at last. What's his name? Not Desmond Dekker. Now, I've been here 52 years. When I started, she told me we'd
what's
have...
His name?
Richard...
We had mugs made up, didn't we? In a poster.
Richard...
What would... thing he do.
What was his name? The old guy. Now, when I started here,
oh, hang on,
52 years ago.
Hang on.
What was his name?
His name was Richard Spendlove.
Richard Spendlove, right. But here's the thing, right? We do this from time to time, and we go off Twitter, and it's life is better, and shows are better when we go off Twitter. Twitter's actually is quite a useful tool, even though it's rubbish. So don't tweet in stuff for the show. Phone up the show, 0344 499 1000. You can text as well if you want, 87222. Start with the word talk, I guess. Is that what they do? Mm-hmm. I never really do that.
Yeah.
25 pence plus your standard network rate. But phone in, guys, 0344 499 1000. So if you've got any suggestions of groups of people you would like us to spend the day with, or activity. You know the kind of thing that we're going for. I'm trying to persuade... They don't all have to be sexual, by the way, obviously. But I am trying to persuade Catherine to go to a swingers party.
Oh.
Well, that's a better reaction than it got the other day when it was a definite no-no. Now it's got a sigh. Okay, we're making progress there. You can hear. We're making actual,
we're
real
not.
Progress there.
I'm just imagining the smell. God, bad enough working with you.
I don't smell of semen and fanny.
No, what you smell of is bad enough.
One in the pink. Oh, no! 03444991000, the late night alternative, dear listener, with myself, Ian Lee, and Catherine Boyle. Weeknights from 10 on Talk Radio.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
Unfiltered night talk with the original king of unconventional conversation on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Some people, they love one another, they learn to... Who is that? Who's some people? Cliff Richards.
Yeah, do you remember he fell over singing that?
In the smoke?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Was it on the Roxy?
No, it wasn't the Roxy. Wasn't it Gloria Honeyford?
No, it wasn't. It was...
Yes, it was.
The Box.
The Boxy.
Was it the Roxy? It was the Roxy. Was
no,
there a thing called the Roxy?
There was a thing called the Roxy. Cliff Richard would not have been on the Roxy. That was for young people. Look at you. Hands away from the keyboard. Look at you, young lady. This is the problem with Britain at the moment.
I'm looking for facts.
No, we've had a conversation for 30 seconds and straight away you've gone to a computer to try and... Why don't we just have it out, like adults?
Because you don't know and I'm not sure, so I wanted to check.
Here's the question I need to ask the listeners. Right, would a lion eat a cat? Would a lion eat a pussycat if it saw it? Because they are cousins, right? Now, if, for example, humans would not eat other humans, regardless of... hang on a second. Please let me get the idea out before you try and tear it apart.
I'm not, but I've had an idea myself.
For example, humans recognise other humans from whatever part of the world they're from, whatever colour... whatever creed, whatever gender, whatever. We recognise humans as humans. Cousins. I recognise people from Africa as my cousins. My ancestors. We all came from Africa. I'm sorry, white guys. We all came from Africa. If you chase it back far enough. But would a lion recognise, for example... the cat that's getting on my nerves the most at the moment, Lucky, because I think she's living with another family in the caravan park behind her house. I think that's what she's doing. One of my kittens is staying out a lot of the time and not eating her food when I put it down for her and smelling of fags. So she's either smoking.
Yeah.
Or she's living with a smoker.
No, the kids vape these days.
What the hell is going on? So, but would, if I had a lion... kept in the garden and Lucky went out, would the lion just look at it and go, oh, that's my cousin, I'm hungry, but it's a cousin. I wonder when the time dinner is. Or would it go, wow, dinner, hum, and have it? What would it do? This is the question. We need a veterinarian. We need an animal expert. We need, you know, one of those boring people that's really into nature to call in and tell us, would a lion eat cat?
My feeling on the matter?
Yeah.
It would get it munched.
I don't think it would. I think there is something... 03444991000, by the way. I think there is something genetic within the genes. Oh, God. I think there's something genetic within the genes of the animals that they would recognise a kinship, a certain kinship.
One word for you, mate.
Yes, sir.
Cannibal.
What about it?
Well, they ate people.
Yeah, they ate people, but they made a conscious decision. It wasn't like, oh, we are...
Don't do the voice.
Okay, thank you for that warning. I appreciate that. Oh, we... here comes a white person... I don't know what colour cannibals are. I'm in a real...
No, you're probably right.
I'm in a real racial minefield here, and I wish I could just back out of it.
They used to call the white man the long pig, didn't they?
Okay, fine. Okay, well, in that case, I'm not being racist. Black people eat white people.
Black people or brown people.
Okay. Not all of them, obvs.
No, but you know these Polynesian tribes, they were always munching,
these
like,
Polynesian
explorers.
Tribes coming over here, eating our clerics.
I think the explorers were asking for it, though.
I don't think they were.
Yeah.
But even the Polynesian tribe would have recognised the... what's the word I'm looking for? Baptist missionary. Even the Polynesian tribes would have recognised the missionary as one of their own, as a human being. Although saying that, when the Dutch and the Spanish went to America, they didn't recognise the Native American as human. They thought they were animals.
Yeah.
When we went to Australia, we didn't recognise the Aboriginal as human beings. We looked at them as animals. So maybe a lion would eat a pussycat. I think we've solved that one. I think we've
cross
solved.
It off then, please.
That is crossed off the... Hey, by the way, happy birthday. You know whose birthday it is today? Let's get the... Oh, hang on a second. Let's get the royal seal of approval.
Hip, hip, hip.
There we go. That's, and I'm going to get you a recording from his actual 65th... birthday party. This is a recording from his 65th birthday party. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, it's... can you guess whose birthday it is? It's earlier today. Here we go. Not quite. There we go, that's it. Who's 65 years old today?
Is it Jackie Chan? Is it?
Hoo-yah!
Hoo-yah.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. That's the worst. I'm sorry, I'm getting audio hijacked so I can nick it. Hang on a minute. That's the worst event I've ever heard.
Hoo-yah!
Yes, Jackie Chan singing that made me laugh. That's the worst sound effect. Let's hear the rest of these sound effects. I've typed in kung fu sound effects.
Right.
Oh. No.
No. Someone's head being rammed into a gong.
there's another minute. That's fist hand stop. There we go. Kung fu clothes, hits and clothing sounds. These really are riveting. It's almost like being in ancient China. Here we go. Let's start. You should try and make... Female grunts. Sounds like he's trying to squeeze one out. There he goes. It's out. Sometimes, you know, it's... And that was it. That was it. Wow. Incredible scenes there. Absolutely incredible scenes. Incredible.
They didn't get the chucks out, though, did they?
They did not get the chucks out. Get your chucks out.
That's what I want to hear. I want to hear a bit...
I'll bring my chucks in one day.
No, I don't want to hear yours.
Yeah.
No, because I'm liable to get them round the ear hole.
Experience the unconventional,
evening, boss.
The unpredictable,
what's happening?
And the completely unorthodox,
exactly.
With rule-free Ian Lee, the late-night alternative with Ian Lee.
I've got no internet for the last 4 days.
On Talk Radio.
So ask me...
That's the noise that Ian makes. If I ever have the misfortune to be wandering around his house when he's hidden himself...
Yeah, it's my house, do what I want.
Yeah, no, but yours... I get catoed.
Let's go to Rhythmic Paul. Good evening, Rhythmic Paul. Hello?
Good evening, madame, monsieur. Good
evening. Hoo-yah! Hoo-yah!
What can we do for you? What can we do for you?
Hoo-yah! Hoo-yah! Hoo-yah!
Hang on a minute, hang on a minute.
Hoo-yah!
Oh, hang on, stop.
Hoo-yah!
No, stop.
Hoo-yah!
Stop. Right, hang on. All right, listen. Were you Kung Fu Master? Just... Bugger off! Take your kung fu away with you. We're not interested. Oh, hang on, I've broken the kung fu man. Hang on.
Oh God.
Hoo-yah! Hoo-yah!
As I'm going down
Hoo-yah!
The street.
Hoo-yah!
Oh, get out of it! Go on.
Clear
off. You bloody mystic Shaolin monk, get out of here! Hang on, there's another one.
Hoo-yah!
Oi, you.
Hoo-yah!
Get stuff.
Hoo-yah!
Go on. Get that away, you bloody open-handed ancient martial arts. Get out of here. Sorry about that, Paul. I do apologise, Paul. What can we do for you this evening?
I called in to comment on... I can't even remember, because you always left-foot me when I come on the air.
No, that's unfair, mate. You just haven't got the skills. Hang on a minute. Oh, no, hang on. There's some kids!
They're very nimble.
It's the bloody Spy Kids! Get out of here! Get back to Tony Flags! Go on, get out of here! And your brother! Okay, that was fun for about 12 seconds, 5 minutes ago. Yes, Paul, what can we do for you? Please get to the point, Paul. Please, I'm begging you, sir.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Firstly, what you were saying about your show in the past 3 years and all of that,
yeah.
I beg to differ. You have not been failing.
I don't think I used the word failing.
Where does failing come from? Why is it so bad?
That's quite harsh. I didn't use the word failing.
Why is he failing?
I don't know. That's he thinks we're failing. This guy thinks we're. I don't want to talk to him now. What a rude man.
What do you mean by that?
What's this, this failing stuff? What are you talking about?
Well, forgive me if I...
Off with his head! Off with his head! Off with his head!
I can't stop it. I can't stop the echo. If you gave an infinite number of Alan Caddicks an infinite number of typewriters, that would be a waste of typewriters, is all I can say.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, no, you've not been failing. You've absolutely not been failing.
Who's been said failing? No, who's been said failing?
I don't know.
Have you been said failing?
No, if he says it again, I'm going to karate chop him.
I'm going to travel up to Glasgow, where we're doing a show soon, guys, which he's not coming to, despite...
I'm coming.
Have you got a ticket?
I bought tickets. I bought two tickets.
I thought you were doing a pop classical concert.
You're playing your drums and that.
I am, but I'm coming afterwards.
Oh.
Okay, well, we might not... I'm taking up the new policy of we don't allow any latecomers into the auditorium after the way we were treated in Brighton by some drunks.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, back to the failing.
I'll be wearing shiny shoes as well.
Oh,
anyway.
Shiny shoes, you say. In that case, you like that, you win.
Exactly. No, I'm very excited for what is to come. Because, you know, you guys on a bad day is still full glory.
What, do you hate me?
I forgot about that.
I should get rid of that one.
And on the topic of artists and separating them from their art...
Yes.
May I give a classical music perspective, please?
Oh, please
do,
yes.
Yeah, I bet there's some old perverts
yes.
there.
Dude, because this is what I want to do. Because part of the reason I think we were failing, didn't use that word, is that we were too lowbrow. I want to go highbrow now. Mm-hmm. So let's get Paul on to talk about, you know, the Ponzi violins and stuff. Go on, yeah.
Well, Richard Wagner, back in the day...
Didn't he murder his wife? Didn't he push her off a boat? I'm thinking of Robert Wagner.
Possible.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm thinking of Robert Wagner, heart to heart. I'm so sorry. Yeah, carry on, Paul.
Yeah. Famously anti-Semitic, you know, committed pen to paper and wrote some fairly nasty things. His music was adopted by Hitler as kind of, you know, the underpinning propaganda music for his whole effort. And yet, I've had the privilege, fairly rare privilege, of being able to, you know, play the Ring 6 times.
Wow. Four operas. Your missus must really love you.
Stop it!
What was it, birthdays and stuff?
All the time. What is it? Four operas.
Child.
It's close to 16 hours worth of music.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a big play, so they say.
Corny. Stop it! Don't bring me into this.
Right, okay. It's not live news, is it, Amy? Because I think we might be very, very late for the news. While the anti-Semite Paul continues to try and justify his horrendous, horrible, obnoxious, racist views. Carry on, Paul.
Yeah. The music is spectacular. The whole entity that makes up, you know, the Ring of the Nibelung is extraordinary. Because he created a theatre. To maximise the effect of the music, which still exists in Bayreuth, and the waiting list is like I think a decade long or something.
Yeah.
The whole thing is extraordinary, and for me, irrespective of the fact that he had some dubious views, people should still have the opportunity to experience that amazing creation.
Paul, listen, it's very interesting. We will talk about this a bit more. I am very late for the news. Always lovely to talk to you, my friend. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Experience the unconventional.
Hello.
The unpredictable.
Don't you think that's a bit weird?
And the completely unorthodox.
It was my birthday.
With rule-free Ian Lee.
I was just trying to generate a bit of content.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
Hate alarm clock. Hate going to work.
On Talk Radio. Here we go.
0344 499 1000. Empty switchboard, dear listener. Empty switchboard. We're going to start thanking the bus driver, guys. We're going to start thanking them. Smooth musical segue coming up. Here it comes. You ready? Here it goes. There we go. was actually quite smooth.
Yeah.
0344 499 1000. Thank you to Will. I've just tweeted a link to buy his book at Foyles, his bookshop of choice, dear listener. Late Night Alternative, weeknights from 10 with Ian Lee and Catherine Boyle. You can phone in Miss LeBlanc. Sorry, she can't phone in. Well, maybe she could if David Babcock is listening. You can phone in, dear listener, about absolutely anything you want. Big, small, macro or micro. They mean the same things. Don't wait for us to put out a question or a topic. You are welcome to pick up the telephone and dial about absolutely anything. 03-44-499-1000. Thank you very much indeed. Can I say thank you as well to the black cab driver today who rightfully called me out for being a dick on the road. Since the car accident I was in, that was just horrendous, and at some point we may go into a little bit more detail of just how horrendous it was. My driving has been impeccable. I'm driving a bigger car than I've ever driven before because I wanted something that was built like a tank. I don't think a Nissan Qashqai is actually built like a tank, but to me it certainly feels more protective of its cargo than my crappy old Volkswagen Polo. Volkswagen. That's how I'm saying it today.
Volkswagen.
Volkswagen. That's how I'm saying it. But my driving since then has been impeccable. And you've been in the car, Catherine, when I've told you to shut up while I'm concentrating at a roundabout.
Yeah, that was way before the accident.
No, my driving has been impeccable. But I'm trying not to beat my horn. I'm trying not to. This buzz. I mean, it's almost as if they don't give a stuff about this studio anymore. I just, you know, I don't beat my. I try not to beat my horn. I try not to flash my lights in anger. But sometimes I do. And my boys have spotted it. And my boys say, I thought you weren't going to do that anymore. And I thank them for it because I want to have a stress free driving experience. Okay, I saw you know, a guy die and be brought back to life in front of my very eyes while I held his hand and shouted at him. So I don't want to see that ever again. Please, thanks very much. It was traumatic. So I want a stress-free driving. And generally, it's working.
Also, flashing lights beeping doesn't rectify the problem. Doesn't make someone a better driver.
No. So I'm getting better at it, right? But then today I was driving into London because I was going to a meeting before work, and I'm driving in by is it Kensington by Harrods round that way,
Knightsbridge.
Thank you. I knew it started with a K. So I'm driving in, and there's two lanes. Okay, there's two lanes, and I'm in the right hand lane, and then there's a guy in the left hand lane. Now the left hand lane would have taken him to the same direction. We were coming to some lights where you could either turn left or right. If you're in the right-hand lane, as I was, you turn right. If you're in the left-hand lane, you can turn left or you can turn right. Okay? But he was trying to come into my lane. Now, that bloody, listen to that. Just turn the computer off. Thank you. So he was trying to come into my lane, but he didn't indicate, right? And we're kind of neck and neck. He's about 6 inches in front of me. But that's it. And he's just trying to come into my lane. The traffic's moving very, very slowly. And of course, I went into old driving me. And I thought, well, I'm not letting him in. I'm not.
As you didn't ask nicely.
Yeah, I'm not letting him in. And so he's getting closer to me. And I'm just right up the arse of the car in front of me. And we're just moving. We're just inching along. And this guy's coming over to me. And I'm thinking, you're going to hit my car. And you know what? I don't care. I was in the old.
Wow.
I was in the old me. And he's getting closer and closer. And then I bibbed him. And he wound down his window. It was the calmest exchange I have involving cars I have ever been involved in. 03-44-499-1000. You got a problem, mate, he said to me. I said, is your... And he's a little bit ahead of me, so I've got my passenger window open. You got a problem, mate. I said, sorry, is your indicator broken? He repeated, have you got a problem, mate? I said, so, I'm so sorry, sir. Is your indicator... I was being overly polite. I'm so sorry, sir. Is your indicator broken? I'm trying to get in that lane. I said, yeah, well, okay, I don't know that, you see, because... Let me explain. On the side of your car... I was actually doing that. I said, let me explain. On the side of your car, there's like a yellow light, and it's called an indicator. And what it does is it lets other drivers, other people around you, know what you're trying to do. So I don't know... Is it... I don't know. I'm really sorry. Is it broken? And so we're having this argument in this very... I believe this is passive aggressive.
What's going through your mind at this point? Have you got a slight...
Oh, I was laughing inside. At this point,
is it exciting to you, this kind of behaviour?
It was a thrill.
Yeah, thrilling.
It was a thrill. But also,
are you frightened you're going to get punched in the face at any point?
Oh God, no! Because I do the trick of picking up my phone and pretending I'm calling the police. So I've got it. I've got this down pat, right? But also I'm thinking, this is funny, man. I wish someone was seeing this. Well, then lo and behold, after 2 minutes, a taxi pulled up in the left-hand lane with his window open, and he looked over. This black cab driver was weighing himself laughing. Oi, Ian, you can't go about doing that. Let him in. And that totally, burst the bubble. And so I'm now shouting over this guy's car to the cabbie. He's not put his indicators on. And the cabbie's wetting himself, going, yeah, I know, but come on, you can't go about like that. He kept saying, you can't go about like that.
And he was right.
And he was right. He was, do you know what? He was totally, of course he was right. Of course he was right. Anyway, this guy, the guy in the middle is still talking to me, at which point we're just ignoring him now. And I'm going, yeah, I know, right? He's not put his indicators on. Anyway, so the car in the middle stays there. The traffic moves. The cabbie moves on and I move on. God knows what happened to the guy in the middle.
Oh, he didn't get let in?
No.
After all that?
Well, no, I was ahead of him now. I couldn't let him in now. And he'd made a rod for his own back because now he was in the middle of two lanes and there was traffic either side. He blew it.
Embarrassing.
That guy blew it. So then I stop at the traffic lights next to this cabbie and I said, look, you're totally right, but... He didn't have his indicator on. Come on, give me a little bit of credit. Come on, I was in the right there. He said, no, you can't go about doing that. He said, you'd be rubbish driving one of these. You'd be out rolling about in the street every 5 minutes. And we had a laugh. I cut him up, gave him the finger and drove on. I didn't. But do you know what? He was absolutely spot on. First of all, I'm surprised he recognised me. Now, I don't have a beard. I don't have a beard, dear listener. You would know that if you paid more attention to the... You can hear it. Listen. But he was
probably from the photo that's being passed around since we had that altercation with the cab driver at Heathrow.
Oh, God, that guy. But do you know what? He was absolutely right to call me out. I was driving... It wasn't the worst driving I've ever seen or been involved in, but it was not...
It was silly.
It was, well, okay, all right, okay.
Petty.
Okay, well, I'm putting my hands up here. Yes, it was petty.
It was willy waving.
Please just stop. It's not willy waving.
You were waving your willies.
I was kind of doing it partly to entertain. I was finding it funny. But the road, dear listener, is no place for a lady. No, who is that? The road is no place for a lady. Is it Cass? Mm-hmm. Cass' album. The road is certainly...
It's the cruel mistress.
No place for... Pettiness. Tom Pettiness. Did Tom Petty ever do an album called Pettiness?
No.
He should have done. It's too late now. He's dead. Tom Petty should have gone to Scotland and recorded a concept album where he looks for a monster and called it Pettiness. Yeah. That works.
I mean, where?
You know it works.
Where does it work?
You know it works. Yeah. That's a winner. I'm taking that one. Where's the? What time does the bank open? I need to go and bank that. But so thank you to the black cab driver, and it made me laugh. He had a laugh. I don't know what happened to the guy behind me. He was a dick.
He was chastened by the experience, but it was
funny. We were both so polite and so calm. He was a big fella. He could have you know, but we were both very. We just went into these roles of Oh, I'm sorry. Is your indicator broken? And the guy's going, okay, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you be in my shoes for a moment and you think about if you were in this car. I said, yeah, if I were in that car, sir, I would be using the indicator if it wasn't broken.
And still he wasn't using it. In fact, of course, the response was, flick the indicator on.
We are starting a new campaign tonight, dear listener, and we need your help, okay? We want to bring back the age-old tradition. I know we've had some people tweeting... tweets don't count in this show. It's all about the phone calls. 03444991000. 03444991000. We are bringing back thanking the bus driver as we get off the bus. Thank you, driver. That's all you've got to do. Thanks, driver. Well, that's all you've got to do is you get off the bus just as the doors open and you put one foot forward before it touches the ground. Thank you, driver. That's it. Because no one, apart from me and a few northern people, No one. Well, you're a northern person. No one does it.
I would give extra points for a good day to you, sir.
All right, Jacob Rees-Mogg. But we need
you on the bus.
We need evidence that you've done it, OK? So I want pictures, photographs of you doing it.
I want video
footage of you doing
it. Don't film it in portrait.
I want audio footage. I want a tape recording. I want a tape recording of you thanking the driver. Oh! Oh! You've got a laminating machine, haven't you?
No, why would I have a laminating machine?
Oh, I thought you had a laminating machine.
No. I've got a stapler.
Google how much a laminating machine is. Because we're going to make membership cards. I thought about this when I was on holiday. We are going to make membership cards. We are going to give them away. We're going to laminate them, and we are going to number and sign. Don't you show me?
It's a variety. We can go to the $46.99, or we can go down to an $18.99. But depends how many of these bad boys we're turning out.
There's one there for $14.75, mate. Yeah. You want the cheapest, obviously.
Really?
Well, you just want a cheap laminator.
Buy cheap, buy twice. Or just buy cheap?
Just buy cheap once. Why would you buy it twice? That makes it expensive. No. Buy cheap, buy once. That's my philosophy. Why would you buy it twice? That's craziness. It's terrible, terrible maths there. Get us a laminating machine. Because you can buy... Do you remember it used to be, if someone had a business card... Oh, they got a business card. And then business cards in the sort of 80s, late 80s, early 90s, became a little bit less impressive. Because where did you get business card printing machines? Train stations. Do you remember that? They would rock up. You'd rock up and there'd be like a big machine. Big old machine. Massive. It was a business card.
So you could print off like boob inspector. Things like that. That's what people did, isn't it?
No!
Yes!
No!
Yes!
Well, if you go to Japan, giving the business
there
card...
There are boob inspectors.
Giving the business card is not a euphemism.
What would it be a euphemism for?
Inserting your penis somewhere.
God.
I'm going to give you the business card if you don't watch yourself.
I'll put it in my wallet.
There we go, you see. Someone gave me a business card and I sort of glimpsed it and put it in my wallet and they were really upset for the rest of the day. When someone gives you a business card, you've got to look at it. You've got to turn it over and look at it and go, wow, okay, thanks very much. And you're supposed to give one back.
Also, those guys take stationery very seriously.
Very, very seriously indeed. Yeah, go on, you get that. So you don't get them at train stations anymore, but I'm going to print up 100 late night alternative membership cards. You get that phone call. I'm going to be quite some time here. I'm on a roll. I'm going to print up 100 late night alternative membership cards. People are going to phone in and claim them. By the way, you and I are getting numbers 1 and 2.
But I don't get a number 1.
No, you get a number 2. And...
Again.
And... I say my ands like Ringo Starr. And we are going to give away this. We're going to number that people are going to phone up and we go, right, okay, your number. I think the first 10 we keep for ourselves and family members, right? So your number 11, and we number it, and then we both sign it, and then we laminate it, and then you send it out. Okay?
Yes.
You up for that?
Yes.
Here we go. 034. Well, not tonight. We haven't got them, so don't phone in for the cards tonight. You will not get them. And they'll get you, like, free handshakes at live events. They won't get you money off anything. We're not stupid. But they'll get you handshakes at events and things like that. 03, Catherine?
Well, okay.
44-499-1000. The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee and Catherine Boyle. Weeknights from 10 on Talk Radio.
Uncut, after-hours conversation for the up-all-night generation. The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
So here's the thing, right? When I left the BBC, when I got the book from the BBC, and I was miserable, and it was Christmas. It was coming up to Christmas, and I spent a lot of time... I just found myself just spending a lot of time online on YouTube, and I fell down a Gary Glitter rabbit hole. I was a big fan of Gary Glitter when I was 14, 15, 16. Big, big fan. I used to go and see him in concert and stuff, and slightly ironically, slightly tongue-in-cheek, but also I enjoyed it. And, of course, he, in the late 90s, was convicted of child pornography, and then in the early 2000s, he was convicted of child rape, and he's raped several children. Poor gad, Gary Glitter. And I was watching a lot of these Gary Glitter videos this Christmas 3 or 4 years ago. I'm really enjoying them. Enjoying them. There's a great arena documentary where he joins up with Jerry Cottle's Circus in 1982. It's an incredible documentary. And I found it confusing because I'd be singing I Love You, Love Me, Love. And the kids would come in and go, what's that song? And I'd go, oh, no, it's nothing. Or I'd be watching a video of Gary Glitter on Top of the Pops or a live concert on YouTube. And the kids would come in and I'd close it down like I was watching a Bluey or something. Like I was watching porn. You know, I didn't want to be... I felt very weird and uncomfortable being... I didn't know how to feel.
As if you were doing something you shouldn't be.
Yes. But yeah, I enjoyed the music. And I've got some really good memories, of going to some Gary Glitter concerts with my friends. Really good memories. And I was trying to work out how my relationship, could I have a relationship with Gary Glitter music still? Was it possible, despite the fact that he had raped children? And I keep saying that because, you know, child porn and child abuse doesn't go far enough. He raped children, I think, as young as 12, possibly 10 as well. You know, it's horrendous crimes he's committed. And it's kind of been on my mind again recently because of the whole R. Kelly thing. The women generally were older, but they were still underage in America. And I think they were as young as 16, 15?
14.
14. Thank you very much indeed. 14. Thank you. Okay. I was thinking 16, 17. But four, not that that makes a significant difference. But
the girls in the video, that the allegation is
you're
that
right.
They're 14.
Oh, absolutely right. And then, of course, and we talked about the R. Kelly documentary. And then, of course, there was the Michael Jackson thing maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, the Leaving Neverland documentary where the accusations of Michael Jackson being a child rapist, which have kind of been bubbling around since the late mid-90s, were brought to the surface again in a really confrontational, powerful way in this documentary. You know, these two men talked about their experiences being groomed and raped by Michael Jackson, but also the conflicting feelings of love and resentment and friendship and betrayal, all of these things, right? And it's got me thinking again about the Gary Glitter programme that Catherine and I made, which you're going to hear in a second, and about artists. And I don't just mean pop stars, but there are so many artists throughout history who have done heinous things.
Roman Polanski, for example.
Roman Polanski raped, drugged and raped a 13-year-old girl anally. By the way, I should have said that before that. This could be triggering. The next 30, 40 minutes could be triggering for you. Should have said that just then. I apologise. There's going to be some frank language. I got a whole list of them, right? I've got a whole list of them from the obvious ones, like Elvis, a paedophile, in as much as he met Priscilla and was courting Priscilla Presley, courting. See, I'm using the word courting. Look, isn't that funny? I've used the word courting, which implies a romantic, old-fashioned... He met Priscilla when she was 14, and it's pretty safe to assume they were having a sexual relationship. Again, look, I'm using language that puts it in his favour. Courting and relationship. He was raping Priscilla Presley at the age of 14, when she was 14. Jerry Lee Lewis... married and raped a 30. I'm using the word rape because a child cannot give consent. His 13-year-old cousin when he was in his 20s. I've got a whole list of not, and it's not just sexual stuff, right? Obviously, there's Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin who drugged and kidnapped and raped a 14-year-old girl, Laurie Mattox, as she's sometimes known, drugged and kidnapped her, locked her in his hotel room so she couldn't get out. David Bowie had sex with the same young girl when she was 15. This is all documented. This is all out there. You've got other stuff, right? Sean Penn. And I'd forgotten about this. Sean Penn got drunk, tied up Madonna, held her prisoner and beat the crap out of her. Beat her up. John Lennon famously... Well, there's two for John Lennon. John Lennon was a wife beater. He beat up Cynthia. That's documented. He also... Him and Stuart Sutcliffe mugged a sailor in Germany. They attacked a sailor in Germany. And there's one theory that that's how... This sailor turned and beat the crap out of them. And there's one theory that's how Stuart Sutcliffe kind of got his brain hemorrhage after that. Phil Spector, a spousal abuser, abused Ronnie Spector and murdered a woman. Shot a woman close range in the face 10 years ago. Philip Larkin, right, great poet, massive racist. Massive racist. These letters that were published 10 years ago, I stopped going to the cricket because, quotes, there are too many effing N's.
Wow.
N for the word we don't say for black people. There are too many effing N's. Horrible racist. Eric Clapton, this is famous, man. A concert in Birmingham in 1974, when he was drinking a lot. Again, I'm justifying it for him. Doesn't matter. What he said in 1974 was, Enoch Powell was right. Send them all back. Throw the W's out. Keep Britain white. Eric Clapton. Right? So there are loads and loads of examples of artists who have done obnoxious things. Now, do you class... Do you put in a league table? Is racism below murder and murder is below child rape? This is in my head how it plays
out. The thing is about racism, there is hope that you might change.
Yes. And it could be argued, and Clapton has since come out and has spoken about this and apologised, and, you know, and he said it was a very low point in his life when he was drinking a lot, and he's come out and he's made amends.
Do we give him a pass for doing a stupid thing, saying a stupid thing, believing a stupid thing?
I think people can make amends for certain things. So the question is, and if you want to call in about this, you can you separate the art from the artist, right? I still like listening to Gary Glitter music. Should it be played on the radio, right? A lot of people still like listening to Michael Jackson music. Should it be played on the radio? Should we, if we're going to boycott Gary Glitter music, then we have to boycott Jackson. Do we boycott Spectre? Because Spectre was only spousal abuse and murder. It wasn't the rape of children. Do you know what I mean? It's a complicated one. So, a couple of years ago, I went and hung out with a load of Gary Glitter fans to try and find out, A, what my relationship was and could be with Gary Glitter. Could I justifiably and ethically still enjoy the music, and also find out why they in, I think this was 2016 maybe, why they in 2016 were still flying the flag for Gary Glitter. So have a listen to this. How do you feel knowing that you're attending the court case made victims of child sexual abuse uncomfortable?
I can say I did what I needed to do. And if the result of that is that they became uncomfortable, then of course that's a shame.
You know that's going to sound cold.
Yeah, I know that sounds cold, but again, I had to go and support Gary.
When I was a teenager, me and my friends really got into Gary Glitter. He was way past his prime, but his concerts were a good laugh. We went and saw him about four or five times. All good fun. Then, of course, Gary Glitter became famous not for his songs and outlandish outfits, but for his sexual crimes. In 1999, he went to prison for downloading thousands of images of child abuse. In 2006, he was found guilty of committing obscene acts with two girls aged 10 and 11 in Vietnam. And in 2015, he was convicted of attempted rape, four counts of indecent assault, and one of having sex with a girl under the age of 13. All hideous crimes and completely unforgivable. But there was something niggling away at me. Then, one bored weekend, I realised what it was. I still liked Gary Glitter's music. A quick look online told me I wasn't alone. There were hundreds of people out there in the dark corners of the web all saying how much they loved the leader. How do they justify listening to his music despite the hideous crimes against children? And would I be able to find peace putting on a Gary Glitter's greatest hits, or would it just be too uncomfortable for me? I had to find out. Hello and welcome to the only Gary Glitter fan club website. No slander will be tolerated here. Well, this website is for exactly what it says on the tin, brackets, the real fans. On this website you will find photos and videos, and you can even leave a message for Gigi. And then it says in the middle, Gary Glitter fan club against child abuse. It's about the music. Okay, and this is the forum. Gary's music rocks, simple as. Check out my YouTube channel if you like. Plenty of GG gems in there. Cheers, Paul. Oh, dear. This poor bloke. Well done for putting this site up. It's very difficult. I love Gary Glitter. I used to make a living doing Gary Glitter impersonations as Terry Tinsel. But obviously not very popular now. I met him several times. He always seemed a nice guy. it's harder to come out as a glitter fan than being gay these days. Here's a good one from Helga in German. She's tried to write this in English. Sorry for my English, but I want Gary say so much. He is a mad entertainer which has mega power. If he's health-wise still possible for the stage liked, he is to consider the pre- and disadvantages attack is the best defence. And even Jesus said, who without sin it is, throw the first stone. So basically, people still love Gary. Well, I'm going to leave a message. Ian Lee. And I'm slightly reluctant to do this. I'm going to put my email on here. Do you know what? I nearly put a kiss there. Probably the most inappropriate kiss I could ever submit online. All right, click the submit button. It looks like they might have closed the forum here to stop spamming. But there is a YouTube channel. Oh, it's called Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Jukebox. Bloody hell. No better place to get glittered in. I bet this is a nightmare patrolling the message boards on here. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send that message to the gentleman that controls this. I'm going to subscribe, although I'm aware that by subscribing, that's going to make me look a little bit dodgy bodsky. Okay, well, I posted on Facebook a couple of days ago, and I have had... Well, let's look at Gary Glitter, Forever the Leader. No responses, although there is a post after mine from Dan Percy saying, are you all a bunch of paedophiles yourselves? Is that why you still support him? If we go to the other page, Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Jukebox, there was a response there from Michael Parker. Michael says, count me in, Ian. Check out my glitter pictures. Now, there's a loaded sentence if ever there was. And I go on his Facebook page and his picture is Gary Glitter in all his 70s glory on a motorcycle. Mobile uploads. Wow. Okay. There's him dressed as, I guess, Gary Glitter. There's him with some Gary Glitter gold discs on his wall. I have to go and meet this guy. I have to go and meet this guy. Right, I'm at Peterborough and I'm just trying to find Michael's house. I've gone past it. I think this is the right road. Very nervous. I wonder if he thinks I'm going to go in with an agenda. Maybe I'm supposed to have an agenda. I don't know. Let's have a little look. Michael. Oh, hello, mate. So, aha. Cool. How you doing? Huh? Well, then you're a very old man.
I'm a very old man. 56.
Nice to meet you, mate. How you doing?
Thank you so much for seeing me.
That's all right.
Cup of tea, coffee.
Cup of tea, white, no sugar would be awesome, please. Wowzers. This is amazing. God, blimey, I'm seeing everything. This is amazing. Do you want to talk me through some of the bits and pieces that you've got?
They're all replicas, all silver and gold replicas of Gary's and the Glitter Band's discs.
I tell you what's making me uncomfortable.
What?
Is this fella here.
The mannequin.
You've got a glitter mannequin. Now, that is... All things to one side, that's weird, isn't it? A glitter mannequin?
Well, it's not really him. It's just what I did because of the costumes I've made. Yep. So I needed something to stand them on.
And the boots? I see you've got some boots.
I had them made. They were shoes I had in the 70s, and I just made them higher.
When did you make them into platforms?
They were platforms originally, just only an inch platform.
Oh, is that old?
But I made them into that sort of height, 20 years ago now, would have been.
Do you go out in them?
I still wear them when I go to see the Glitter Band.
Yeah.
And when I last went to see Gary, would have been then, in 97, with my best mate, he stopped being a Gary fan.
What was his reason?
He couldn't separate Gary Glitter from what had happened, because we all see Gary Glitter on stage, and when the accusations of the young girls said what they said, and when it came to court last year, I think I just put the nail in the coffin for him, really.
I tell you what, I'm going to be honest, it's weird coming in here, because Gary Glitter is a taboo. You know, he has been whitewashed from rock and roll history. Yeah. And it is very, very strange to walk into a room and see so much Gary Glitter stuff.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah. It's the music that I feel sorry for, that you can't hear it anymore. You ever mention his name, people would look at you and think, you know, but that's not the Gary I knew.
You say you were friends with Gary?
Yes, I met him several times. First time I met him would have been 77 at Bailey's and Leicester.
That was when he'd retired and he was sort of making a comeback, his first comeback, was it?
Yeah, so it was a cabaret club, yeah.
Yeah. And you went back to the hotel to meet him?
Yeah, there's myself, two of my sisters and some friends, yeah, no problems at all. Down to earth, pleased to see us all. But he was never any sexual connotations at all. Came to see him in hospital in 1979, a broken neck, motorcycle accident.
He came to see you?
Yes. Blimey. I was due to go and see him in Bedford on the 12th of December. I couldn't go, so my sister Caroline went to my place, and she got backstage.
You got some scrapbooks here, which I'm keen to have a look. Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. Housewife Carolyn Lunny wants pop star Gary Glitter to visit her teenage brother, Michael, who's seriously ill in hospital. She says, Michael, 19, is Gary's number one fan. Were you his number one fan?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
And he came along?
Yes, he did, yeah. He actually came. He kept it out of the press. He kept it quiet. The press didn't know anything about it. And then he actually came to see me. And then after he came to see me, it was in the press. Went back to my sister's house, because I lived with her at the time.
I've got to ask a question that I'm hesitating asking.
Go on.
And if I ask anything you don't want to answer, tell me.
Come on.
How old was your sister?
Caroline, she was born in 19... Somebody, it's Gary. She was born in 1944, okay. 44, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so she was the same age.
And you understand why I'm asking that question, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good,
no,
yeah.
She had a daughter. Her daughter was 16 at the time when he came back to the house.
And did Gary Glitter hang out with her daughters?
No.
No?
Never.
Okay.
No.
What is interesting here, you changed your name to Gad?
Yes, 1979.
That's taking fanhood into another level, isn't it?
That was done as a bet to start with. Oh, so yeah. I bet you wouldn't do it. So,
because all the best decisions are.
Yeah, so I didn't regret it at all.
And you changed your name back from Gad to your original name when the trouble kicked off?
Yeah, I just changed it in 1999, so it was a couple of years after the trouble.
Because he was... If I got this timeline right, he was accused in 97 and convicted in 99 of the child pornography on the computer.
That's it, yeah.
Let's have a look at some more clippings that you've got. You've got,
I've got
a very healthy collection. I've got to go back, because I noticed we've just flipped past the picture. Here we go. Gary gets rid of his glitter.
Yeah, that's been told at all.
And there's Gary in a bath. With
it's a hot tub.
Yeah,
but I don't know who the girls are.
Okay. An advert here for the review for the single What Your Mama Don't See, Your Mama Don't Know.
Yeah. And of course, because of the name of the title, people read into it and that.
You can understand why that was.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you?
Yeah.
I've got to ask about the crimes that he's been found guilty of.
Yeah.
So found with thousands of child pornography images on his computer in 97 and sentenced in 99. There was also that weird thing where he travelled around Cambodia and Vietnam and was convicted in 2006, I think, of an assault against children in Vietnam.
Yeah, and went to prison for that.
Went to prison for that. Came back, served the rest of his sentence here. And then, of course, in 2015, found guilty of attempted rape, I think, and sex with a girl under 13.
Yeah. Some of that, I don't believe a lot of that. They said in court that it was unbiased, but how could it have been because of all the newspaper coverage that had been in the past? Apparently, he had sex with a girl backstage in 1977 wearing one of his glitter suits and platform boots. He stopped wearing platform boots not long after 75 because there were no good for his feet in that. Mm. He never wore glitter suits backstage after a gig ever. Not when I met him, he didn't, never. When I saw him in 77, I was 17 at the time. I didn't see young girls in the audience at all, young as 10 anyway. But then your mother would have known not to let you be backstage on your own with a pop star, regardless of who they were.
But yeah, he was found guilty.
Yes, exactly, yeah. I think because of the child pornography was done first, I think a few people came out of the woodwork. In the 70s, lots of young groupies at that time. They knew what they were doing. They knew it's a pop star, not just Gary, to other people as well. You know, it's famous, blah, 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 you know. They do their best to get in bed with them. What ages they were, I don't know. I don't agree with it, but it happened in the 70s, didn't it?
Why do you think they're picking on Gary Glitter, then, in that case?
Because of the Jimmy Savile thing, I think.
Right. So you think that, that, correct me if I'm wrong, that the nation, the press, whatever, the public, are so annoyed that we let Jimmy Savile get away with it, yeah, and he died with, yeah, all the, that we want to pin it. We want to pin something on someone. Somebody. And so
Gary did the next best thing. That's my.
Do you really believe that?
Yeah, I do. Proving it is another thing.
Mm.
The only person who really knows himself is Paul Gadd.
Isn't it interesting? That's the first time we've used the name Paul Gadd.
I said we're about this. Paul Gadd and Gary. He was charged as Paul Gadd, not as Gary Glitter. Yeah. That's how I separate the two.
Yeah. Supposing Paul Gadd did do those crimes.
Yeah.
Can you separate the two enough that you could still enjoy Gary Glitter, even, yes, if Paul Gadd had, yes, committed those horrible,
yeah,
crimes?
Yeah, because they're two different people.
Yeah. It's the same person, isn't it?
It is the same person, yes, but looks nothing like Gary Glitter to me.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Cheers, take care. See you later on. Bye-bye.
Cheers,
see you later on. Well, there we go. You know, what a nice bloke. What was I expecting? He's a bloke who likes music. Blinkered? Maybe. In denial? Possibly. But, just a nice bloke who likes music. Ugh. Michael made me feel very welcome. He also made a cracking cup of tea. Next up, I was off to meet VJ, who runs a Gary Glitter YouTube fan page. Yep. That looks like it. It's the man.
It's your man.
Hello,
hello,
David.
You're all right.
I'm Ian.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you. You're all right.
Oh, yeah. I'm Karen, anyway.
Hey, Karen. Nice to meet you. Thank you. Am I just going straight through?
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely. VJ, you run the Facebook page, you run the YouTube page. We were just talking, yeah, about this. You must get a lot of abuse from people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's the price you pay for being a Glitter fan.
What kind of stuff do people say?
Well, pedo lover, that sort of thing. You know, what you're doing, supporting a pedo, which I do understand and comes with a gig, as I say.
I've seen some abuse. I don't know if it's necessarily directed at you, but they're accusing the people who are running the sites of being a pedo. They've done that to you?
Yes.
Because that must be really upsetting.
Yeah, yes, yes. It does hurt, but I don't suppose that'll ever go away, which I understand that.
It's interesting, isn't it, that Glitter has been pretty much erased from musical history. You know, if you listen to a chart rundown from 73 on, yeah, Radio 2, they'll skip him. He's not on Top of the Pops 2 anymore.
No.
Yet they will play songs by Jonathan King.
Yeah.
Do you think it's fair that Glitter is excluded completely? Do you understand why they do it?
Yes, yeah, I understand why they do it. But to me, it's music. It just comes out of a speaker. What harm is that doing? But other people think different. So, I mean, I didn't choose to like Gary Glitter's music. The music chose me. I'm a great believer in that. Gary Glitter's music chose me, and that is the way it is. I can't help liking Gary Glitter songs, but I do. And I believe in power rock and roll. I believe in listening what I wanted to listen to.
A little bit of my background. I say I was a Glitter fan.
Yeah.
Went and saw him loads of times. And it was that 97 when found that he had thousands of images of child pornography, yeah, on his computer. And he was convicted in 99. And that was when I kind of had to say, I can't be a part of this,
yes,
anymore. And I was gutted. I was devastated. Yeah. I was heartbroken. Yeah. And I thought, I can't be involved. What was your reaction? What were your feelings when you heard about it?
I was more or less exactly the same as your feelings. When it happened, I got his autobiography, Leader, it's called.
Yeah.
That went straight in the bin. Records, all the vinyl went up into the attic. I didn't have the heart to throw them away. I'm glad I didn't now, to be honest with you. They went up in the attic and that was it. I've done myself with Gary Glitter and forgot about it all. And then the computers come along, YouTube come along, and I jumped on YouTube and one night I looked over my shoulder, typing Gary Glitter. So I typed in Gary Glitter, yeah, and that was it. All comes flooding back. And I thought to myself, this is wrong. This is wrong. I like this music. I'm going to listen to this music. So that, and it sort of went on from there.
And do you know when that was, roughly? What year that was?
Oh, no, I'm not. No. It's a good few years. Yeah. I left it a good
because other stuff has come out, and I have to say that, you know, the other stuff that he's done, he was convicted in Cambodia in 2006, and the conviction last year of sex with a girl under 13, mm-hmm, attempted rape, molestation, mm-hmm, he's been found guilty of it.
Yeah.
Does that not make you question it at all?
Yes, but it's still, it's always an odd one.
It is a tough one.
Yes, but at the end of the day, the music will still be there. It will never go away. And that's just the way I look at it. It may be wrong, it's the way I look at it, but it is the way I look at it. And it can't be just me.
Well, obviously it isn't, because how many people are in your Facebook group?
I've got 600 in the one I run at the minute. And I've got 1.8 million views on the YouTube channel. So it's a fair few. It's a fair few.
Is there a part of you that's doing it to wind people up?
No, not at all. Not at all, not at all. I'm going to bite back sometime, because he does get to you at times after the millionth time of being called a pedo lover, you know, that's worse than things than that as well, but, you know, I'll just try and ignore it and just get on with the music, get some rock and roll done.
What's interesting is, because I've met a couple of people, and I've spoken to a few more people online.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I'm expecting, but the people that I've spoken to and the people I've met are, in inverted commas, normal.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And do you understand why that's a little bit surprising?
Yes.
I'm not expecting you to be paedophiles at all. Yeah, I know that that's a nonsense to brand the fans that, but I was expecting something a little bit weird. Do you know?
Yeah. This is why I'm sort of glad I've done this interview with you, just to have people can to let people know that we're just normal, everyday people that likes the music, and that is it. End of story.
It was interesting talking to VJ, and he made a good point, but I still couldn't imagine listening to Gary Glitter music guilt-free, especially not in front of other people. Well, then I found out that a couple of original members of the Glitter Band were going to be doing a gig at a really small venue in Birmingham. I got in touch with Claire and Lewis, who were going to the show, and met up with them in their B&B. I'm in the hotel room with Claire and Lewis. We're in Birmingham. Why are we in Birmingham? What's happening?
We're coming to see John Russell and Harvey Ellison, who are two of the founding members of the Glitter Band, and they're playing tonight at the Roadhouse.
And what are they going to be playing? Do they play... I mean, obviously they play Glitter Band stuff. Are they going to play Gary Glitter songs? What's the set?
Mixture of both and also a few other songs that fit in with that Glitter Beat style of music.
When they're playing the Gary Glitter songs, is there anything in, you know, is there ever any tension in the audience? Is there ever anyone going, oh, you shouldn't be playing that?
It's almost like a release, actually. Like, you can actually go out and enjoy listening to it, dancing to it, and other people are there with you doing exactly the same thing, and nobody looking at you, you know, with daggers in their eyes, thinking bizarre thoughts about you.
It is... you know, we talk about guilty secrets in music. I guess, you know, Leader of the Gang, Do You Want to Touch, I Love You Love, you know, these are kind of the dirtiest secrets in music, aren't they?
I don't really know what you mean by that.
Well, just that you don't hear them on the radio, and when it's Pick of the Pops on Radio 2, you know, if it's Gary's at number 7, it kind of gets that number 7 doesn't exist, you know.
That's true. It's very, very sad, and it's just not right in my view.
Ever met him?
Yes, I've met him quite a few times.
Where and when, and what was he like?
In the 90s, met him a couple of times. Me and my friends, obviously, were a bit more mobile then. We found out where he was, and we'd go to see him at various locations, and obviously he'd love to see his fans at any opportunity he gets. And then I was fortunate... Well, I was in the right place at the wrong time in, I think it was, 2012. I was down his street, and he happened to be walking by, and I went up to him because I knew that he was quite deaf, but I didn't want to shock him, and I just put my hand on his shoulder, and he looked round and he said, Claire, he said, I knew it wouldn't be long before I saw you again.
What were you doing in his street? You stalking him?
Something like that.
Okay. Lewis, it's got to be said, you're a young man.
So I'm 25, so born in 91.
Wow.
And I first heard about Gary in the newspapers. I think, obviously, when I was about 16, he was in the papers with a lot of negative articles over, and a lot of hatred in the press.
That would have been his convictions for downloading child pornography? Is that what that was?
That was post-2000.
Right.
So, of course, everything the media were covering in Vietnam, that was the stories that was in the paper at that time. So I remember asking people, who is he? Mm. And they said he was a famous singer. And then I had to then go onto YouTube to discover that past that no one spoke of.
How does it sit with you? And I'm curious because I don't know how it sits with me. How does it sit with you listening to Gary Glitter, knowing what he's in prison for?
I'll be honest, being a Glitter fan is not something I would share with people. People get very angry and they accuse you of perhaps supporting paedophilia when it's clear that, you know, no person would ever support that. And I think just because someone listens to a piece of music, it doesn't mean they are supporting paedophilia. It means they are supporting a song that's 40 years old. And a song that is just a song.
Claire, do you get, stick, abuse? What do you get when you tell people you're a Gary Glitter fan?
Well, I used to be a little bit more vocal about it now, but as Louis says, you just don't want to people to be pointing their finger, giving you funny looks. I just keep it a bit more to myself now, and I find that really sad that I have to do that, because it's nothing to... What he was accused of doing is nothing to do with me liking his music.
How do you, speaking to some of the people for this, they seem that they say that they are able to separate Gary Glitter, the musician, from Paul Gadd, the paedophile. Is that, and I can't get my head around that. Is that how it works for you?
I find that really difficult too. I don't think I can either. The music's different. Gary Glitter's, a caricature of something, but it is Paul Gadd playing that person.
And also, he would have used that status, that stature, that fame to appeal to young, you know, to girls, to little girls.
I wouldn't say that at all, no.
Okay, really? Why not?
Well, I know he was found guilty and he admitted downloading the child porn, but as for the other charges, I just can't see that to be true.
Really?
And we were at the court and I didn't hear any evidence that would stand up. But the jury have read all about him, regardless what the judge decided. He thought that wasn't true, that they probably already made up their minds, and he was going to be found guilty before the trial started.
So you don't think that he did rape, sexual assault, sex with a girl under 13, which is what he was found guilty of?
I don't know, but I just didn't hear enough evidence for that to be for him to be found guilty.
Lewis, you went to the court case. That's a weird thing to do, isn't it?
Yes, it's a weird thing to do, but anyone I knew, I would go to support them. No matter what they were accused of doing, I would do it for anybody, because I think...
Even though they're accused of raping a child?
I just felt that was something I needed to do, and I obviously know people will criticise that and find it odd, but I think me as a person, I would want to help someone, but also I'd want someone to not feel alone, and I think that's why that I chose to go and support Gary.
It's very noble to support someone, you know, in their hour of need, but how do you think that made the victims feel?
I believe I sat behind one of the girls in the case, and they were not happy to hear our conversations in support of Gary, and appeared very angry.
You can understand why, can't you?
Of course, obviously, we have to respect their feelings. But I think that it is their right to be angry, but it's also our right to go and support Gary. And I know that's a strong...
Well, no, and this is really... This is an interesting thing, and I didn't expect the conversation to go down this route, because I didn't know that. How do you feel knowing that you're attending the court case made victims of child sexual abuse uncomfortable?
I don't have any feeling on that. I can say I did what I needed to do. And if the result of that is that they became uncomfortable, then of course that's a shame.
You know that's going to sound cold.
Yeah, I know that sounds cold, but again, I had to go and support Gary.
Hello, mate. Can I get a lemonade, please?
Yeah, do you want
thank
any
you.
Ice,
yeah, I'll have some ice, please. Thank you. Well, there's about, I'm in the bar and there's about a dozen people here.
Have you been served?
Oh, that young man's sorting me out already.
I'm going to have to make a move, mate. It's really nice to meet you. Thanks a lot for your time. See you later on.
Thank you, mate. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
Have a good night. Take care. Which door?
That one that says way out.
Yeah, the one that says way out. That would be the clue. Thank you. Oh, man alive. Well, you can hear it coming through the walls, can't you? That was weird. I mean, that was a really... It's been a nice evening. I've been there for 3 hours. It's been a really nice evening. Enjoyed the band. Had a weird argument with Claire about the whole paedophile thing. Where previously she said she thought that Glitter was only guilty of downloading child pornography, only guilty. But then we had a really weird argument where she talked about the court case and she ended up saying that she thought he probably had slept with a 12-year-old girl. But. And there were all kinds of buts and things. And I said, yeah, but you're saying he slept with a 12-year-old girl, right? That's wrong, isn't it? She went, yeah, but... And then she fired off a load of excuses. The two main ones seemed to be that women mature faster than men. And what about other rock stars that had famously, you know, allegedly slept with girls when they were underage? She cited Bill Wyman. And how come he got off and Glitter didn't? It was unfair. And I said, well, do you want them both to be in prison or Glitter? It was a really weird argument and it got quite tense. The show itself, I stuck around for a bit of it, and when they played a Gary Glitter song, I Didn't Know I Loved You Till I Saw You Rock and Roll, I started singing along, you know, and it felt kind of good to be singing along to it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the group thing, and I guess at that precise moment, I wasn't celebrating Gary Glitter. I was celebrating a bloody good song, my childhood, nostalgia. I don't know what I was celebrating, but it was it wasn't Glitter. A weird evening full of emotions. It seems to be that a lot of the fans can separate Glitter from GAD, the crimes from the music, although most of the people I spoke to seem to think that Glitter is innocent. And it's a stitch-up. It's a conspiracy by the media. He's a scapegoat, and we went into theories of VIP sex scandals and all kinds of stuff. I don't know. The conversation about the 12-year-old really threw me, and I really it got quite heated. Am I any clearer on my relationship with Gary Glitter? No. And his music? No. But there was something when an original member of the Glitter Band played I Didn't Know I Loved You Till I Saw You Rock and Roll. I was singing along and I was doing the harmonies. Confusing stuff, man. I've got a long drive ahead of me. I think I'm going to get in my car and get home. None the wiser.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
03444991000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Let's go to CJ. Good evening, CJ.
Good evening.
Good evening, CJ. Let's get to the point.
I've had a really weird weekend.
Okay. Well, it's Tuesday.
Yeah, it's still weird.
Well, it seems your weekend included a Monday, which will make it double.
It did include the Monday.
Well, then that's not a weekend. That's the start of the week.
Well, I have got
Although in many faiths, the Sunday is the start of the week, which is insane. And that's not me being anti-Semitic. I'm not saying that the Jewish faith is insane.
Well,
shut up! But having a Sunday as the start of the week, which I think is how the Jewish faith sees a Sunday, that's insane. But I'm not saying Jews are insane. That would be crazy. Well, hang on a second. Getting in a terrible minefield here, so let's just back away. CJ, what do you want?
I want that first membership card.
Well, you can't have it.
But I can.
Well, no, you can't, because we're not doing it yet. I specifically said don't phone up for the membership cards now, because we're not doing it. I haven't printed them. We haven't got a laminator. We haven't got any of the equipment.
They're in his mind's eye, in his ME.
And here's the thing, CJ. Because you've defied the rules, you're not getting one at all.
I'm going to wrestle you for it, Ian.
You're not going to wrestle me. You're not getting one. You're not getting a membership card. You're not getting a wrestle. You're not getting any physical contact with me. That's that done. Tell us about your weird weekend, you pervert.
Went to see George Galloway in Manchester.
Okay. Did he know you were coming?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
And me and Becky the Witch went to see him. And we were at this bar drinking colas, and Ken Livingstone
walked. what brand of colas were they? Were they Pepsi? Were they
Pepsi.
Panda? Were they Coca? What colas?
Corona.
What colas were they?
Pepsi.
Okay, Pepsi colas.
Pepsi colas.
No, it's Baby Sham, isn't it? Yep.
And then Ken Livingstone walks in to the bar, and it was a strange moment, and got a photo with Ken and...
Right, hang on, if you're telling me that your weird weekend was weird simply because you saw Ken Livingstone at a George Galloway event, I'm going to cut you off. Okay. No. I mean, that's not that weird. They're friends, aren't they, I'd imagine? Ken and George. George and Ken.
Well, that went well.
Tell you what we need after that. We need a meditation. Computer on, please. Computer. Hello, computer. My favourite line in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, where Scott, they go back to 1986 or whenever it is, and Scotty needs to work a computer, and he's just looking at the computer, and he's going, why doesn't it work? Oh, you need to use the mouse. And he picks up the mouse and looks at it and goes, speaks into it. Hello, computer. It's such a good film, man. Star Trek IV is where it's at. Anyway, we need... I think we need to chill out after that. Catherine, what are we about to listen to, please?
My youngest doing a bit as a Zen master.
Let's have it.
Hello, fellow humans. Modern life is very hectic, so I thought we should take a little time for a moment of Zen. Today, we are going to learn about the invisible kitten. Don't worry if you're allergic to actual kittens. This won't make you itch at all. And best festival, no litter tray. Close your eyes and empty your mind. Let all the cares of the day drift out of your ear holes and out the window. Or the cat flap if you have a cat. Bye-bye. Now our heads are nice and empty. Imagine a nice, sweet kitten on your lap. If you prefer a ginger one, have a ginger one. If you prefer a black one, have a black one. You could even have a pink one, or a blue one, or a red one. Just make sure it's lovely fluffy like a unicorn, and fast asleep. Watch his belly rise and fall, rise and fall. And try and time your breathing in time with the little kitten's belly. Watch you go in and out, in and out, in and out. Now let's just sit quietly for a while and feel the soft fur underneath your fingers. What a sweet little kitten. Let's just sit quiet for a while and enjoy the moment. I love to enjoy the moment. There, wasn't that lovely? Well, sadly, we're going to have to wake the kitten up. Send him on his way back home to where he belongs. But the good news is, because he's an imaginary kitten, you can get him back anytime you like. In 3, 2, 1, let's open our eyes, wake the kitten up and send him on his way. Are you ready? 1, 2. Bye-bye, kitten. Wasn't that relaxing? Thank you very much for keeping me company in this little moment of zen.
Thank you.
My head is lovely and empty, and I hope yours is too.
It is.
Night-night, weirdos.
Thank you, little, and that was great. I feel much more relaxed after that.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Here we go, some show tonight, guys. I can feel it. I feel it in my water, and by water, it means urine. I know I touched it. I wiggled on my hands. I could literally feel it. 03444991000. There we go, you see. 03444991000 is the telephone number. We've got Will Storr coming in whenever he turns up. I mean, he said he was going to be about 10:15, so he's still got 10 minutes to be on time. But, I mean, dear God, 10:15? What a weird time to agree. And you mark my words, when he comes in, he's going to get a right royal rollicking, Catherine. Late Night Alternative, Ian Lee.
Catherine Boyle.
It's doing harmony.
Catherine Boyle.
You do the same.
You
do the melody and I'll do the harmony.
What's the melody, though?
Just your name.
Catherine.
Say it normally.
All right. Catherine?
No, you're saying it like a dick. Just say Catherine Boyle.
Catherine Boyle.
Say it now.
Catherine.
You're doing the thing. It's going all rugger. Just say your name.
Catherine Boyle.
Say it.
Catherine Boyle.
There you go, that's it.
What the hell was that?
It was a failed attempt to start a vocal duo group in the style of Dollar. That's what it was. And the thing is, in this, I am the lady who I think was called Toulouse-Lautrec, and you're David Van Day. Therese Bazaar, that was it.
I thought it was Pamela Bazaar.
Therese Bazaar. Wasn't Therese, wasn't Pamela, wasn't Toulouse. It was Therese Bazaar. Here we go. Oh, And that reminds me, actually, I've got to do some work at my home tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've got to raise the bar. Dr. Ray's bizarre. It doesn't work. I thought it was buzz. Bah. There's that buzz. Okay, fine. So, busy show this evening, dear listener. 0344 499 1000. What this show has needed for a long time, a really long time, is a campaign. Campaigns get you press. We're desperate to get press. It's season 4 of the Late Night Alternative. We've got another 12 months of this. And the way to get press, we've done press before, by eating a pig's vagina, by falling down a well, by faking being attacked by an owl, and by saving a man's life.
Can I just say I didn't do any of those things, especially not the vagina part.
Okay. But now the step rule 5 is we need a campaign. We need a campaign. And here's the campaign we're going for. Forget kids who are dying. Forget old people that are dying. Forget anything to do with health, because that's just mucky. It's just a quagmire. It's just a quagmire. What we need, and I'm going to tell you this before you go downstairs to get our guest, who I believe has arrived.
Uh-huh.
What we need is a campaign, and the campaign is this. We are bringing back, when you get off the bus, shouting up to the front,
"Thank you, driver."
Thanks, driver. We're bringing that back. That's the campaign. Now, it's a tough one. It's a real tough one. I do it all the time to the embarrassment of my kids. I don't think I've ever been on a bus with my kids. But what we need is audio and video clips of you, dear listener, using buses. And as you get off, "Thanks, drive."
Thanks, drive.
So you can say
casual.
That. Thanks, drive. Thank you, driver. Whatever, we need to bring this back. Are you with me or are you agin me? Tom, Dick, and indeed Abdul. 03444991000. Will Storr is in the building, Catherine. Can I send you on a mercy dash?
Yeah. When do we start getting cross with him? Once he's sitting down?
Oh,
or can I do it up the stairs?
No. No. It's gonna be like the lion's den. You bring him up all nice and friendly. As soon as he comes in, I'm gonna rip him a new one. I don't know what you're typing, Amy, because I can't see it. Oh, he's up here. He can't hear us, can he? Oh shoot.
Can I, like, when he gets in the doorway,
good,
can I like boot him in with my foot?
No, right, when he comes in,
get in.
We're gonna rip this guy a new a-hole, because I mean 10:15 is a very...
I mean, who does he think he is?
He thinks he's some fancy, swanky writer. As soon as he comes in, can he hear us now? Okay, fine, then you shouldn't have let him in, Amy, so we can hear the plan. When he comes in, we're going to give him a... He's there! Oh, God, look, I thought it was my reflection because of the... Will, come in! Come in. We're going to tear him a new one. We're going to tear him a new one. This is going to be awkward for you, dear listener. You might want to switch off. I'm going to destroy him. Here he comes. Come in, Will.
Here he comes.
Great to see you, buddy.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Good
to
right?
see you. Yes, yes.
Good to see you again. How are you doing, Catherine?
Sit down.
Now, what's going on? I can hear
nothing.
Planning and
skiing. No. Nothing.
Oh, no.
Catherine, here's the thing. I'm going to tell you what was going on there. Get nice and close to that microphone because they're cheap. Catherine thought it was rude that you've decided to come in at this time of night, and I said Will is a very busy man. Will is busy. He's got a new book out, The Science of Storytelling.
Wow.
He was a very important do today, probably to do with books and art and stuff. I'm guessing, and he can come in whatever time he wants. And she was like, "Oh, when he comes in, we'll shout at him and we'll tell him he's rude."
You said you're going to karate chop him in the windpipe.
No, that is libelous. That is a lie. You wouldn't do that to Will. I'm a big fan of his work.
Yeah, Ian, you're forgetting that I did email and say I can be there at 9:55, but I'm doing something. Is it okay? And he went, "Yeah, of course." He said, "You can come in whenever you want,
okay,
mate." And now I'm getting grief. Are we on air?
Exactly.
I'm getting grief on air.
What happened? But it was the tone of the email that I found disrespectful to you. Tell you what, you got a coat on. Take a coat off. Would you like a drink, Will?
Oh, is this me getting the drink?
Is it a trick?
I'll go get it if you want. I don't mind going to get him a drink.
I'd have some water, thank you.
Bit tense. You might want to come back another night, Will.
You can have a hot one if you like.
No, thank you.
All right.
A little bit tense tonight, Will. Maybe you won't be selling any copies of your book tonight.
Oh, well.
Let's take a break while Will Storr gets himself comfortable. 03444991000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
We're on the radio now, so you say, no, if you carry on talking if you want, but if you're about to reveal intimate secrets...
No. So Ian and I were just talking about my wonderful wife, who is a magazine editor.
Yeah.
And because she's a few years younger than me, and we've both been working our way up through the media, I've always been a few steps ahead of her. But that kind of switched around maybe 5 or 6 years ago when she got her first editorship. And I really quickly noticed the difference that makes, because we were invited to drinks with some people in the media who hadn't seen for quite a while. And we turned up and I was completely ignored.
Wow, okay, yeah.
For the first time. All the attention was on this amazing magazine editor. And I actually found it quite funny. It was a really interesting experience.
I would find it funny. I would find it interesting. But I've been thinking a lot about ego recently. And ego is something you can't really control. How did your ego react to it? Was there a bit of the feeling? Here's the thing. My ex-wife, she used to hate it. And she's a reporter. She's a really, really good reporter. But people would come up to me and they would come up to us and they would talk to me.
Yeah.
Because I'd been on the, I was a familiar face on the telly or radio, and would just completely ignore her or go, could you just take a picture of us, please? You know, hand her phone or something. And that's what she, to a certain extent, was perceived as. I know that she hated it, understandably so. You know, she found it really, and she would quite often just go off and walk away and let us get on with it. How did you find that kind of shift in focus?
Well, not too bad. So the reason that why it wasn't too bad is because I see us as playing slightly different games.
Yep.
She's an editor, I'm a writer, and these are related but different things.
Yeah.
And we had a situation last year where Farah wrote a brilliant book called The Discomfort Zone, and suddenly she was playing my game.
Right.
And I did wonder, if Farah's book becomes a massive bestseller, how will I cope with that?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, you know, I'd love to say, I'm just supportive and proud of my wonderful wife.
No, that's
and it's not a gender thing. It's just purely an ego thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
of course.
I think I would have, I genuinely think I would have found it difficult. And at one point she said to me, you know, if my book really does well, you're not going to be jealous, are you? And I said to her, and I said to her, I can't promise you that.
No, is that something beyond your rational, loving, logistical control?
Yeah, and it was a slightly awkward moment that I felt bad about. But
luckily,
at the same
it was
time,
a huge flop. So you're going on Amazon leaving 1-star reviews under different logins.
It really was. No, it's done really well. So, but yeah. So, so that was the learning for me. So
yeah.
I don't want to sort of make out that I'm this sort of big man. Oh yes, I'm fine with her soaring celebrity. But I don't see us as competing, and I think that's the difference.
It's like A Star Is Born, but in the literary world. That wasn't a cough to indicate. I actually literally had to clear my throat then. That was a genuine, I'm clearing my throat, but it was like A Star Is Born, one of our favourite films, Catherine.
I hated that film.
Yes. I did too. Yes.
It's so boring. Yes,
what else was everyone seeing? Because they loved it, didn't they?
Well, and I thought there was this moment in the car park where she was singing this song that was supposed to be, oh my God, she's a genius. And she's just shouting.
But that's what I do with my kids when I go, I think I've got a song, guys. Here we go, I love you so much, my baby. But
it was like the worst Simon Cowell audition.
But isn't it funny, after one listen, he managed to arrange and write the rest of the song ready for it to be performed.
Yeah.
To her surprise.
Yeah. I have come to the conclusion, and I think I heard Limmy. I don't know if you're aware you are of Limmy.
I love Limmy.
Isn't he great?
Yeah.
And I think I heard him express it first, and I've been thinking about it a lot. I've come to the conclusion that I don't like stuff that everyone else likes. Not in any way just to be difficult or obtuse. It's just, I just don't like it. Star Is Born was getting 4- and 5-star reviews, and I thought it was awful. The Ricky Gervais programme, Afterlife, which everyone has raved about, you like it a little bit better than
me. I thought it was all right.
I just watched it. I watched the first 15 minutes and went, this isn't speaking to me. There's so much stuff that everyone else is liking, and I'm going, I don't get it. I don't understand what it is. So maybe I'm just genetically predisposed to not like stuff. Maybe I'm just a miserable old git.
A contrarian.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree with you with it. I mean, I sort of departed from Ricky Gervais actually quite early during Extras. It was Extras.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of The Office.
Of course.
You a fan of The Office?
I love The Office.
So it's not everything.
Yeah.
I saw For Work. I had to see his film. It wasn't The Office. It was the David Brent film.
Oh, my God. I went to the premiere of that.
Did you?
Oh, it's the law of diminishing returns with him. It's all going down there.
Yeah. And I you wonder who...
That
who
film.
Who is the talent behind... You might know, Ian. Who is the talent behind The Office?
It would appear that since he split up with Stephen Merchant, Stephen Merchant seems to be going... I didn't see the film that Merchant did with The Rock, but that got quite good reviews, the recent film he did. It would seem that Merchant is, you know... But, hey, Gervais is getting paid $11 billion a year from Netflix.
As he keeps reminding us.
He does. You've got a book.
Yes.
Did you bring it?
No, but you've got one there.
I've got it. The Science of Storytelling, Will Storr. And bless you, I was away last week with my boys in the country. We rented a cabin. It was, I make it sound more rustic than it was. It was a luxurious cabin with a hot tub on some kind of cabin resort. And we were just having the best time. My seven-year-old has got this line now, which he came up with. They got in the hot tub every single day and every single night. And I found some champagne, plastic champagne flutes in, and I poured orange juice in. And then I got in the hot tub, and my seven-year-old turned around to me and went, "More champagne, beautiful." And that line has stuck now. That's now his catchphrase every time he sees me, because he says, "More champagne, beautiful." And he's totally made it up himself. But last week I got your lovely email saying, "I've got a new book out." I don't, in that very British way, when you get Americans emailing, "I got a new book out, where should I send it to you? When can I come on?"
Yeah.
Which I kind of respect him. But a lovely email saying, I've got a new book. I don't know if you'd be interested in having a look. I went, "Dude, I love you. Of course I would love to read it. And when do you want to come on?"
I was very flattered. Thank you.
We're big fans of yours, Will. But I haven't read it.
No, of course, you've only just got it like 2 days ago, so, yeah.
So, The Science of Storytelling, and, well, you tell us what it is.
Well, I'm trying to kind of tackle the kind of ancient problem of how to tell a story, but from a scientific kind of perspective. So by using kind of the latest things that we know from psychology and neuroscience and evolutionary psychology, you know, how our minds have evolved, to kind of show in a hopefully relatively new way how stories work.
And I have read a little bit of it. This, because people will recognise you. You've been on the show before. You did Will Storr versus the Supernatural, which is just a great read. And I don't want to take money out of your pocket. You can probably get it for a penny on Amazon.
At the most. Yeah, you can get three for one.
It's such a good book. There's Heretics, we had you in. The last one was Selfie. Was that the last one?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm missing one, aren't I?
There was the novel.
Okay, right.
Everyone misses the novel.
Okay. But in the introduction to The Science of Storytelling, the new one, you talk about how when you were writing the novel, you were reading loads of how to write a book.
Yeah, so I was researching the Heretics, and the Heretics, as you know, is about the psychology of belief. And the question that the Heretics ask is, why do clever people end up believing crazy things?
Yeah.
So it's not like, why do idiots believe, because that's obvious. It's like, you know, how does David Irving, who was once this very well-respected historian, not a stupid man, come to believe that Hitler was a friend of the Jews? Like, insane idea.
Oh, the Heretics. That's when you went on that. This is such a great book as well. It was Heretics, wasn't it? Where you went on an Irving walkabout?
I went undercover
around Auschwitz or something.
It was a holiday for 7 days. Yeah, around Holocaust sites with Irving and a bunch of... he's quite litigious. Yeah, but no, they were.
I remember this one because he's explaining the gas chambers to you, that they're not gas chambers. Obviously, they could get out. So what?
Yeah, he was sort of joking there. He was pointing out, "There's the box office." It was a joke. But there were genuine.
I'll open with that one, David. But yeah, we get
there were genuine Nazis there. There was a guy who had a tattoo of some sort of Panzer Division on his body somewhere.
Wow. Like,
yeah, so there were genuine Holocaust deniers there with him. I'm not saying that he is one.
No, of course.
But he certainly was one at one point. I think we can say that. But there were lots of Holocaust deniers there, and I was trying to blend in with him for a week. So that was part of the Heretics. And to understand, how is it that these people, and David Irving himself, come to believe these insane things? And one of the really interesting things that I found was that a lot of these people on that trip had parents that were literally Nazis in the Second World War.
Wow.
So their mums or dads, probably dads, were Nazis, were actual Nazis. And so on the last night of this trip with David Irving, there was this a celebratory viewing of Downfall, the film. No, it wasn't really celebratory. But it was like, you know, it was a gala.
They're all crying at the end.
A gala viewing of Downfall, which, of course, is the fantastic German film about the last days in the bunker.
Yeah.
And one of the guys on the trip excused himself because his father was there and he found it too upsetting.
Oh, God, they actually were crying.
But seriously, so the thing I thought was really interesting was that these were... And the kind of knotty thing, the thing about storytelling that kind of fascinates me is this is very simplistic. The brain is a storyteller, and stories in novels, films, cartoons, fairy tales mimic what the brain does to us all the time.
Yeah.
The mind, the self, is a story, and it's a simplistic story. And the simplistic story about these people, they were just all horrible Nazis, awful, awful, awful. And of course, they weren't all wonderful. But some of these guys were really, really nice to me.
Yeah, of course.
So at the beginning of the trip, I was going to say shot my load. I don't want to use that phrase, but I was interviewing David Irving.
This is escalating.
And it became obvious that I wasn't necessarily on his side, and he kind of stomped off. And I was panicking because I spent all this money on this trip and I needed to have to get more out of him. And he promised he would sit down with me later, but he kept putting it off. And I was confiding in the Nazis, saying, oh, I'm really worried because David Irving promised me time and he's not giving it to me. And then at the end of every day, we'd have this meeting, and there would be like a lecture, and there'd be lots of questions afterwards. And it turned out that all the Nazis had conspired behind my back to ask questions of David Irving that they thought would be useful to my book project.
Isn't
that
nice?
And it was like such a nice thing. It was really a nice thing.
That's the thing is that we think of Nazis as evil, and it's an evil ideology, but of course, you know, they feed their pets and they love their mums. You know, of course there is niceness around that denying the Holocaust and hating Jews. You know, I'm not making light of it, but there is that niceness.
Well, the idea that came out of that was that not all of them, of course, but a lot of them, it seemed to me, were on this lifelong mission to defend the reputation of their parents who they loved.
Right, right.
So the thing that comes first is, I love my dad, I love my mum, but the rest of the world is telling me Nazis are synonym for evil. So it can't be true. So you go on this lifelong mission looking for evidence everywhere that it's not true. And of course, that's how you become a Holocaust denier, because you find all this, in inverted commas, evidence that it's a whatever.
When I was away last week, my light reading was a book written by Mae West, one of the daughters of Fred and Rose West.
Oh.
Really good book. Came out last year. It's called With Love from Mum. And I get confused with the family tree. I think she was possibly the fourth child, because Fred had a couple of daughters before. There was Charmaine, and there was Anne-Marie, and then there was Heather, who was the one they murdered, and I think May came fourth. And it's not really about Fred West. It's about her relationship with Rose West, and for the daughter's relationship with Rose West. And for a lot of it, for most of the book, even when Rose West is in prison and has been found guilty, May still can't believe that her mum, even though her mum used to beat her, even though her mum knew that their dad sexually abused them and would kind of laugh it off, even though the mum would lock them in a, you know, did terrible, terrible things.
Yeah.
She still can't quite believe, despite all the, she does towards the end, spoiler alert, but for most, she still can't quite believe that her mum was capable of murdering her sister, was involved in the murders of the nine other women, was involved. She can't buy into that, because that's her mum.
Yeah.
And she goes, I can believe it. My daddy was weird and he abused us, but I cannot get my head around. And part of it was that when Fred was arrested, such a good book, when Fred was arrested, one of the daughters and the son and Rose were put in a safe house where they were being bugged, but they were locked in this safe house for a long time. And Rose West was kind of brainwashing them, just going, I can't believe your effing dad has got me in this effing trouble again. I can't believe he's done this. I didn't know. And so she was just getting constantly on the loop. And she still struggles to accept her mum did all of those
things. I just find that fascinating.
Things.
Because that's exactly what I was seeing in these people on this Holocaust thing. They were essentially decent people who have made a mistake.
Yeah.
And the mistake is rooted in their love for their parents, just like this daughter of Rose West, who... and this is really what the science of storytelling is about. It's about these characters that we meet in story who are absolutely convinced of a thing. The story is there to kind of shake them out of that kind of misbelief. And as you know from the stuff in The Heretics, when we talk about how the story manifests in the brain, it's sort of hard to explain, but the reality is that we experience is a story. It's we see evidence everywhere that backs up our biases and misbeliefs and prejudices. So it's so hard to think your way out of the story that your brain's telling you. It really is possible that your most deeply held beliefs about the world are completely wrong, but it doesn't feel like they're wrong because they form the structure of the reality as you experience it in your head.
Is it Heretics Politics or selfie? I get the two slightly confused. Where the everything we see happened like a second ago, two seconds ago.
Heretics,
wasn't it? Heretics. Yeah. So the brain is constantly filling in the blanks and making up a narrative.
Yeah.
So what you see is very narrow, and the rest is made up.
It's they call it a controlled hallucination. So we feel like we're looking out of our heads.
Yeah.
Into the world, but we're not. If you think about it...
I always get uncomfortable when you talk about this, because my eye... I don't know where to look. Go on.
Information only comes in, and that's one way.
Yeah.
So it comes into your brain, and that's where it stays. So you're not looking out at anything. Everything that you experience is out there is actually in there.
Yeah.
So and it takes some time for all that information to travel from your senses into the brain, and the brain to convert that into this controlled hallucination of reality. And so in order to help us interact with the now, it has to throw us forward. I mean, there are kind of variations in the predictions of how much that forward is. But if you're throwing a ball, if someone throws a ball at you, your brain moves it fractionally forward so you can catch it. Otherwise, you'd miss it.
And so that's kind of an example of I don't want to, you know, keep going on about The Heretics. It is a great book, by the way, dear listener. I thoroughly recommend it. But the brain is a storytelling machine.
Yeah.
It's constantly telling stories.
Yeah.
And you say in the bit of the book I have read, it's not actually the scenario or so much what happens, it's the characters that interest us. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So if you read most books on storytelling, they tell you how to tell a story in the form of a structure.
Yeah.
So what people have done before is they've taken all the great stories and they've compared them together and they've kind of run their divining rods over them and seen what they've got in common. And then they've gone, okay, well, this is the perfect story. Like the Joseph Campbell monomyth is the most famous one. And they go, this is a story. And so the only way to describe the perfect story is by describing a kind of sequence of events. Mm. So you've got this kind of recipe solution for storytelling, which is kind of what we're surrounded by in Hollywood, in long-form TV, in lots of commercial fiction. It's this kind of recipe for storytelling. Mm. But if you start with the mind and the brain, you start off somewhere else, and that's with a character, because, of course, mind and brain is about personality and who we are. Mm. And for me, that's a much more interesting kind of idea about storytelling. And so what emerges from that is that, yes, all this stuff tends to happen in story, and some often in a certain sequence, but the most simple form of that is crisis, struggle, resolution, the classic kind of three act. But what's really going on under the hood, as it were, is that at the beginning, it's really about character. It's about who we are. So humans are a weird kind of ape. Like, we're not like an ape. We actually are an ape.
Yeah.
But we're weird because we're hypersocial. And so there's a very famous psychologist called Jonathan Haidt, who's also an author. And he says that we're so social, we're part B. So we really are unbelievably collaborative and social. And that's how we've dominated the Earth, is by working together in groups. And that's why we're so kind of groupish.
Well, that's why I voted Brexit. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. So that's our environment. So dogs live in a world of smell.
Yeah.
Knife fish live in a world of electricity. Moles live in a world of touch. But humans live in a world of other minds. We're constantly worrying, thinking, talking about other minds, because that's how we have to that's the realm we have to understand in order to get what we want out of life, which is to survive and reproduce. And so that's what story is. So just like a dog, I walk my dogs every day. They spend all their time sniffing stuff, and I'm like, why are you sniffing all that? It's so boring. But it's not boring to them, because they live in a world of smells. The smell is infinitely interesting to them, and story is infinitely interesting to us, because it's about minds, it's about other people. So what story is always asking of its characters is, who is this person?
Yeah.
Who is this person really? You know, I see you've got the Frank Sidebottom t-shirt on, and I saw the documentary last week.
Isn't it brilliant?
Absolutely brilliant.
It's so good.
And I'm not a fan of Frank Sidebottom.
No.
I know you are, no offence, but I thought it was an amazing film, because he was a fascinating character.
Yes.
Who is this person?
Yeah.
And the film worked, because it was a brilliant deep exploration of this really fascinating man, and it's fascinating. And so that's what stories are. They are, you take these kind of flawed characters who do weird things, and the plot puts them under a lot of pressure, and the job of the plot really is to put huge pressure on, to force them to kind of show who they really are. So if you think about some of your kind of famous scenes in fiction or movies, some of the most dramatic scenes we have are when people are feeling under immense pressure and they're forced to choose, am I going to be this person or am I going to be this person? Mm. And that to me is the kind of essence of drama.
Well, a lot of the hero stories, the Star Wars, it's where someone is, you know, their intent is pure, but they're not very skillful or haven't quite got that killing thing. And they go off and they are tried and tested and put through all kinds of ridiculous tortures and things. And then they come out, you know, from the boy to the man.
But that's the classic story, isn't it? You can look back to the Greek myths for things like that.
Yeah,
and
course.
What it says to man is, you are better than you realise, and actually, you are amazing, and then there is hope in life.
But you have to go through hardship to reach your full potential. You can train and you can think about it, but you've actually got to suffer to a certain extent to come out the other side. You mentioned as well about the... so much money is made in stories, books and movies primarily, and video games as well, actually, you mentioned. But so much of them, so many movies now, are these really crap... They're done by corporation. It's, you know, and having worked in TV a while ago, it's very rarely is it one person's vision of, I've got this idea and this is what I want to do. There are a few examples, and those are normally the best things. We talk about The Office. The Office was two people's vision, and... I know that Steve and Ricky, they managed to bat off every bit of input that the BBC made, and they said, we're going to do this, but only if you let us do it our way.
Yeah.
And so there's hardly any input from the producers.
But there's great characters in The Office.
Yes.
Really good, genuine, three-dimensional characters, which you don't find, as far as I'm concerned, in some of Ricky Gervais's later
work. You suspect that other people have kind of got involved. And this is it. So many movies, so many of the big movies, you know that it's been through a writer, then it's been through a director, then it's been through five producers, then it's been through the commissioning editor, then it's been through a head of a studio. It's just filtered away, and it's almost like, you know, an adventure by numbers. You know, you follow these, you've got to hit these specific points, you know.
Yeah, that's how it works. And, absolutely right. And there's a good reason for that. I was just sort of talking, the thing I was at tonight was actually a storytelling course by other people. John York, the brilliant author of Into the Woods, so kind of the kind of godfather of all this stuff, and Tim Lott, the novelist, and Tim Lott was making the point earlier this evening that film costs a huge amount of money to make, so those investors want to know, they want some kind of science involved or some kind of like, so are we hitting all the story beats? And I think that's why it becomes so formulaic, and because there's a lot of money at stake, and it doesn't cost much money to publish a book. So there's less risk involved. So
let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We're talking to Will Saw. The book is The Science of Storytelling. I shall do links and what have you on Twitter in a minute. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
We've got Will Storr, who's got a new book, The Science of Storytelling. I did a tweet earlier on, and I wasn't thinking, I called it The Art of Storytelling, and someone kind of pulled me up before you saw it. You didn't even know about it, and now I've told you.
Idiot.
Balls.
Idiot.
Absolute idiot. Why did you write this? Because this your usual stuff is going out with people on the fringes of society, whether it be ghost hunters or whoever, and finding out what makes them tick or how they fit in. So why have you written... It's kind of an instruction manual for telling stories.
Yeah, well, because it became a bit of an obsession after The Heretics, this idea of the brain as a storyteller. It changed the way I saw myself. It changed the way I saw... everybody else in my life. It changed the way I wrote, and then I carried on the exploration in Selfie, talking about how we're a cultural self too. And then I started teaching courses, teaching other writers how to you know, to storytelling. So I wanted to kind of close that chapter in my career and go, this is what I've learned about the brain as a storyteller before I moved on. I mean, and initially, because I wrote that novel, and the novel was kind of trying to work out how does storytelling work? And you know, I think I was partially successful, but I wanted to write the storytelling book that I wish I'd had when I was writing my novel.
You mentioned at the start that you read a few when you were writing the novel. Were they any good? I've never read one. Are they any good?
They are. There's lots of useful ones. I'd especially recommend John York's Into the Woods, Christopher Booker's The Seven Basic Plots, if anybody's interested.
Because I've always imagined that writers just go, I've got a book. I'm in me and I'm going to write. And they just sit down and they write it and they pour it out. And it's a little edited a little bit.
That's what they say. I don't think it's true that often.
Really?
I think they secretly have all the books. So what interested me in the idea was that I was struggling with my novel, reading all these books, whilst working on Heretics and interviewing some of the world's best neuroscientists and psychologists. And what they were saying about how the brain processes our sense of self were the same things as what the storytelling people were saying about how you tell stories. And I was like, oh my God, like they're saying the same thing. So I thought it might be interesting to put them together, which is kind of what I did in The Heretics. Mm. But this is the kind of...
I just opened it. Compressed time. Story time is compressed time. And it is, isn't it? Because, I mean, films are not 90 minutes anymore. I don't know when they started becoming 2.5 hours long. That's ridiculous. Tell a story in 90 minutes, please. But it is, isn't it? A book, you know, a good book, you can read it in a couple of days if you sit down and... But it can cover... 100 years.
That's right. Gandhi's 3 hours, but you still feel like you've seen all of his life.
Yeah.
Like it feels real, and that's part of what the brain's doing when it's kind of producing this story of us. It's radically simplifying reality. That's part of the job. Like we're surrounded by chaos and chaotic information and contrary information, and it turns the narrative of our lives into this very simplistic kind of cause and effect. Journey. It populates it with heroes and villains. It gives us a kind of a quest to go on. And if we're psychologically healthy, that's what's going on. We are kind of experiencing our lives as this David and Goliath journey, which is very, very fictional. And sort of what the book sort of goes into is, I think, some of the problems that this leads us to in real life. So when we come across people who don't see the world as we do, rather than going, oh, that's interesting, that's odd how they have these different beliefs to us, they become villains.
Yeah.
And we start to hate them and disparage them and other them and call them evil and nasty. And we see so much of that at the moment. And it's just people's storytelling brains working overtime.
Well, I mean, the obvious example of that, of course, is we don't say his name too often on this show, but people like Tommy Robinson and the hatred directed towards Muslims because they look different, but also their God is a different colour, and so you're saying that's kind of part of the normal mental process is if people are significantly different or we can perceive them, it's what happens every time in economic hardship. Mm. Is it's not your fault because you're a white middle class guy. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's their fault because they look a little bit different.
Well, to a certain kind of person.
Yes.
Because underneath all of this, we're tribal animals. We're the main tribal animals. So one of the things that binds us together in our tribes is that we share a story of the world, a simplistic narrative of the world.
Yeah.
And like a story in a movie, like a story in a book, a story is this kind of sequence of causes and effects. So we look out into the world at the stuff that's happening and we construct this simplistic narrative of cause and effect. So in terms of hardship, a certain kind of person, a really right-wing person in that kind of tribe, will look out into the world and see whether it's Muslims or whether it's Mexicans in kind of Trump's America This is the cause and effect. This is the cause that's having this negative effect on my people. But of course, that's not everyone. People on the left will go, well, they'll have a different narrative of course and effect.
There's a brilliant paragraph. I've literally read the first two chapters. I'm sorry. But the beginning. We beetle away happily into our minutes, hours and days with the fact of the void, the fact we're all going to die, hovering over us. To look directly into it and respond with an entirely rational descent into despair is to be diagnosed with a mental health condition. You're right. We're all going to die. And you could die on the way home tonight. Yeah. Hopefully, you've got another 40 years, but
tops.
You're going to die, and you're going to die, Catherine. I'm going to die, but we all kind of just carry on.
But that's
almost
part of
ignoring
the,
that.
That's
fact.
part of the reason that the brain tells this heroic story, this optimistic story of the world, because it gets us out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
So there's an idea in psychology, they call it depressive realism. Also, when they test depressed people's instincts about life and about their own kind of chances for success in the world and kind of the nature of reality, they find that depressed people are more in touch with reality than happy people.
Right, yeah.
So to a certain extent, happiness itself is a delusion.
Yeah.
There's one of these studies, I think I write about it in The Science of Storytelling, where they got people who work in a restaurant to write out all the kind of positive things that might happen for them, and also the positive things that might happen for the people that they work with that they liked, and there were far more things for them than the people around them. We know we're all if we're not suffering from clinical depression or something like that, you know, we're all kind of being deluded by this.
Yeah,
optimistic story that says that we are this amazing David on this journey to make our life and our lives and the world around us is going to become better and better and better. And sadly, it's not true.
But if your next holiday makes you feel like a superstar, you go for it.
But the great thing about the storytelling brain is that even when we're hit with failure, we feel terrible for a while, but we pick ourselves up, don't we?
It's going to lead to better things.
The next time.
Well, this is my new thing that I've really grasped onto, is that this everything we're doing now, your book, this radio show, everything, we are literally just filling time until we die. This show until 1 o'clock is to hopefully make you feel a little bit better as you edge ever closer towards your inevitable death. That's going to happen. Yeah. How do you teach a writing class? I just, when you mentioned it, I have an image of like loads of adults sat at desks and you kind of walking up and down, looking over their shoulders, going, yeah, very good. Well, I would change that. How do you do that? I'm sure it's not like that.
It's a bit like that.
Is it?
No. So I when I first started doing the course, it was basically me talking for like 4.5 hours. And by the end of it, everybody wanted to kill themselves. Like, that happy, delusional thing just exploded. And they just, so I had to sort of work out a new thing. So it's kind of broken down into 10 little mini talks.
Right.
And they're broken up with like video clips. We look at things like everything from Citizen Kane, so Walter White, Breaking Bad.
So the teacher wheels in the VHS.
Exactly. Everyone loves it. Everyone's like, oh God, thank God. You know. I do like a week long course, and for that,
Comes to those? Is it novelists? Is it journalists, or is it everybody?
It's a lot of novelists. It's some screenwriters,
right.
It's often people who are kind of middle aged who've just decided, right, the time has come.
Okay.
I'm going to follow my dreams and write a novel, and I want to know how it works. But it's people at all levels in the kind of spectrum. I had a great message from the brilliant Charlie Higson the other day. Who's no storytelling slouch, who was very happy with the book and said it was one of the few useful ones he'd read. So that was really
brilliant.
Great. So it's I think what I'm sort of really happy about is that I feel like it's offering something genuinely new by. Yeah. This scientific approach and psychological approach.
I just reminded, we had a caller from the States.
Yeah.
Can't remember where he's from. A guy who, you talk about people in middle age, you know, going, oh, I'm going to write the book. And years ago, it used to be called vanity publishing, didn't it? Where you would go and get 1,000 copies of your book printed. And now, it's incredible because you go to a website like Unbound or there's loads of others and that will print on demand, you know. So you write a book and if you sell 10 copies, they'll print 10 copies. And it's actually kind of lovely and they look like, in inverted commas, real books. But we had a guy from America. Mm-hmm. Was it him or his wife that phoned up first? I can't remember.
His wife spoke first and then she passed the phone.
Who'd written a book and he really wanted to publicise it. So he was just looking online for like radio stations and he saw Talk Radio UK. Yeah. It's like, wow, okay. So I think he emailed us or something and it popped up on the screen saying, I've written a book, would love to. So we just phoned him up straight away. This guy, and it was, you know. I paid,
I can't remember what it was about.
I've got it on my computer somewhere. I paid the $8 for the download. It's not a great book, but
he made something.
He made something. And then his wife phoned up again, didn't she, about a month ago, saying he's nearly finished his second novel. I don't suppose you'd be interested. Get him on. It's from Texas or something. So he's got a very broad Texan accent selling his book. Good for him.
Yeah, good. When I say he's David fighting the Goliath.
Yes.
He's, I'm going to be a novelist and I'm going to get all these knockbacks, but it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's human ingenuity, that's human progress, that's what's built the civilised world, so you can't knock it.
Oh, well...
Well, you can knock it.
You can. Because I blame 50 Shades of Grey, because wasn't that a self-published book first?
Yeah. Well, I actually write about that in terms of storytelling, so I thought it was really interesting. So there was a data analyst and a publisher that got together a couple of years ago, and they built this algorithm that you could, I don't know how it works, but you basically feed a book into the computer. I'm imagining somebody shoveling pages into a slot, but I don't think that's how it works. And it can predict a New York Times bestseller with an accuracy of 83%, I think it is. So
wow.
It's a pretty good thing. I don't know what the thing. And they analysed 50 Shades of Grey because it's a big mystery in publishing. How the hell did this book end up becoming successful? And it had this really weird plot shape. They plotted it on a graph and it's just these regular ups and downs, which you don't often see in story.
Well, that's the bedroom scene, isn't it? And,
they weren't regular.
But then they also did the same thing with that. What was that other book that came out of nowhere and sold millions? It had Tom Hanks in the film, The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, Da Vinci Code.
And it had almost exactly the same plot shape. So there's something. There's some weird alchemy that both Dan Brown and
E.L. Wistie,
E.L. James,
E.L. James.
Yes.
Had both perhaps by chance hit upon where so I talk about it in the book.
Was 50 Shades of Grey, wasn't it a Twilight fiction?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. She thought, oh, I'm not done here. Let me write it for myself. And so she's happened upon this thing that's turned out to be a massive money spinner and a range of terrible films.
yes. And presumably it's outsold. Is it outsold Twilight? I don't know.
Have you? I don't want to show off, Will, but have you ever had any erotic fan fiction written about you?
Oh, are you joking? Of course I haven't.
Well, you're lucky, I might toss some off.
Oh, I see.
I've got quite a bit. I've got quite a bit of erotic fan fiction.
Can we have some? Can we read it out? It's late.
Catherine, do you want to find?
I had a look last week, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because you think it's. I think it's
hilarious.
You think it's
funny.
Can't
say it out loud.
Well, one of them, right? So there's a few, but mainly since The Jungle, and there was a few, and then one young lady messaged me on Twitter and said, "Oh, thanks for reading out my fiction." I went, "Oh, okay. You know, we thought it was a lot of fun. Thanks so much." And then I clicked on her bio, 15 years old. So that was the end. Wowzers. So have you got it?
Yeah.
Listen, now Will, this is proper.
I can't read this out. You've got to read it.
I'm excited.
Where are we? Hey. No, so, hang on.
Yeah, no, this is...
Is this me?
No.
Oh, no, so this is Grace. Hey, I smile, skipping down the little slope beside the red throne where Stanley Johnson is sat. What are we all chatting about then? So this is in the jungle.
Oh, right, yeah.
Looking at my side, I sit down on the log with Ian on my immediate left, Amir on Ian's left and Jenny to my right. Just about how Ian is a great guy, Amir starts off. Amir must be around 30, but Ian a little younger. Thank you. Dark brown hair coating over a face with lit-up eyes. Ooh, charismatic, charming and good-looking.
Good-looking.
That's later.
You're jumping forwards. Yeah.
Ian's spoiler a hit alert. With the ladies in camp for camp for sure. Especially after eating those strawberries, Amir says. I let out a breath, feeling my stomach drop, as the arise of this incident again is going to inevitably result in drama. The whole camp... Let me get to the rude bit. Hang on a minute. It's quite
not
boring.
It's really rude, this one. It's kind of the promise of a kiss and a date. I mean, she's 15, so just as well.
Stop trying to entrap me for crying out loud.
Yeah, let's
here
get
it goes.
One.
Cheers. I think lifting my head up and grabbing Ian's, letting him pull me up from the floor.
Can I just say this is great? The way Will's coming to promote me, but he's made it all about me. This is wonderful. This is wonderful. This is what it should be. This is show business. Right, listen. The book is The Science of Storytelling by Will Storr. I will, and you're at W Storr on Twitter.
That's right.
STORR.
Yeah.
I'll tweet a link during the news if people want to go and check this out. Have you got ideas percolating for the next thing?
Yes.
Have you left those kind of investigative books behind?
No. I'm going to go back there.
Okay.
So, for the next book. So my next book is going to be about status. It's all about status.
Okay.
And about how important status is to our sense of well-being.
Yeah.
So I don't know quite what I'm going to do yet, but one of the things I really want to do is to... go and find a community where they believe they're living without any hierarchy and status, and see what that's like. Because my idea is, I bet they're not. I bet there are leaders.
So you think that it will always appear
exactly.
that someone has to take control.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
it's
you'll never get anything done. Will you?
Yeah.
I'm sure the first one that springs to mind is the Amish, but I'm guessing they must have leaders.
Of course they have.
Of course they do. They might pretend that. Is that because to me, that the biggest experiment in that was communism, and that's
right.
George Orwell.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a crazy idea that there's no status.
You want to find a load of off-grid hippies.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what
they'll be off-grid, though. You won't be able to find them. You can't just go
can't
just
email,
go on
can't tweet them.
So how do you do it? Do you... Just you're out walking. I get my best ideas when I'm out walking. I don't have a dog anymore, but when I go back home with the boys and I go out for a walk with the dog, that's kind of when Kath will be bombarded with texts going, right, I've got this idea and this idea. Is that how you do it, or do you sit at a computer?
No, that's exactly right. Yeah, so I walk my dogs twice a day.
Right,
and I have my phone and Google Keep. And
Google Keep?
It's a great app, and it's just notes, and it syncs with everything.
Oh,
yeah, it was basically, and you can talk to it. So I'm walking the dogs, talking to my phone, going,
this is future man we've got in here. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's free. And so everyone obviously who lives near me thinks I'm this lunatic who goes around just talking out loud about
they don't realise you're
the
working.
History of mankind. It's ridiculous.
So status is the next thing, but very, very early stages.
Yeah, I haven't started.
Done it, anything.
Yeah, it's going to be out in 2021.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll see you then.
You could be dead by then, Will.
Yeah, I could
we've
be
established
dead.
This.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that confidence. I'll be out by. I've been working on a book for 6 years. 6 years.
Mm. You have.
For 6 years, though.
What book is it?
It's a book. I think I mentioned it before, and obviously it didn't have much of an impact. Each chapter is a different TV show that I've worked on, and going into intricate detail of what an arsehole I was in some cases, what other...
I would read that in a second.
I know, but it turns out writing a book, Will, is really, really hard.
You need a ghostwriter, mate.
How much do you charge these days?
we'll talk about it off here.
That laugh means he's expensive. All right. Well, it's always lovely to see you. Anytime you want to come in, traditionally, guests come in at the top of the hour, but that's fine. The science of storytelling. I can't look at him, Catherine. Is he angry? Will Storr, STORR. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to tweet a link to it. Amazon, is there a better place for you? Is there a place you get
more
money?
Do you know who support me?
Yeah.
Foils.
Foils.
They're very supportive of me.
We'll find the link for Foils then. Yeah. We'll do that. We'll send it out.
And they can send it out. They can post the book to you as
Brilliant.
Well.
Brilliant. I always prefer doing that if we can avoid it. The show continues 03444991000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
03444991000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Let's go to CJ. Good evening, CJ.
Good evening.
Good evening, CJ. Let's get to the point.
I've had a really weird weekend.
Okay. Well, it's Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm still weird.
Well, you think your weekend included a Monday, which will make it double.
It did include the Monday.
Well, then that's not a weekend, that's the start of the week.
Well, I have got
Although
a weekend.
Although in many faiths, the Sunday is the start of the week, which is insane. And that's not me being anti-Semitic. I'm not saying that the Jewish faith is insane.
Well,
Shut up! But having a Sunday as the start of the week, which I think is how the Jewish faith sees a Sunday, that's insane. But I'm not saying Jews are insane. That would be crazy. Well, hang on a second. Getting in a terrible minefield here. So let's just back away. CJ, what do you want?
I want that first membership card.
Well, you can't have it.
But I can.
Well, no, you can't because we're not doing it yet. I specifically said don't phone up for the membership cards now because we're not doing it. I haven't printed them. We haven't got a laminator. We haven't got any of the equipment.
They're in his mind's eye, in his ME.
And here's the thing, CJ, because you've defied the rules, you're not getting one at all.
I'm going to wrestle you for it, Ian.
You're not going to wrestle me. You're not getting one. You're not getting a membership card. You're not getting a wrestle. You're not getting any physical contact with me. That's that done. Tell us about your weird weekend, you pervert.
Went to see George Galloway in Manchester.
Okay. Did he know you were coming?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
And me and Becky the Witch went to see him. And we were at this bar drinking colas, and Ken Livingstone
walked. what brand of colas were they? Were they Pepsi? Were they Panda? Were they Coca? What colas?
Corona.
What colas were they?
Pepsi.
Okay, Pepsi colas. Oh, no, it's Baby Sham, isn't it? Yep.
And then Ken Livingstone walks in to the bar, and it was a strange moment, and got a photo with Ken and...
Right, hang on, if you're telling me that your weird weekend was weird simply because you saw Ken Livingstone at a George Galloway event, I'm going to cut you off. Okay. No. I mean, that's not that weird. They're friends, aren't they, I'd imagine? Ken and George? George and Ken? Say something. I'm looking at you.
I don't know about their personal relationship or lack thereof.
Let's go to G. Good evening, G.
Evening, boss. I had a business card. That was laminated.
Why does this sound disgusting?
Why does it sound like the batteries are running down on the tape player that's recorded your side of the conversation? Come on!
I had a business card that was laminated.
Okay, you're about to get a punch in the face. Yes, go on, and? Is that it?
Borderline.
You're so close to being cut off. My fingers hovering over the cut off button.
Oh, hover.
Hovered.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.